No one sits in the front row.
That's true. That's true.
Here we have no choice.
Yeah, exactly.
So what pew did the Liffrig family occupy? I know you occupied the same pew every Sunday.
Oh, it was maybe a few rows back.
Yeah. Right side or left side?
Usually the right side.
We were always right, six rows back.
Left.
Yeah.
Good morning, everybody. We're now on the record. Let the record show that it's approximately 8:35 a.m. on December 15th, 2015. We are present in the commission hearing room in the state capitol in Bismarck, North Dakota, for the public hearing scheduled to address the negotiated settlement agreement between Northern States Power Company and the commission advocacy staff. The agreement relates to a number of docketed PSC cases involving NSP, including case numbers PU12813, PU13706, PU13707, PU13708, PU13742, PU13743, PU13194, PU13195, and PU1596. The Public Service Commission has requested the Office of Administrative Hearings to provide a procedural administrative law judge to preside in this matter. My name is Wade Mann, and I am the procedural administrative law judge so designated. At this time, I will introduce the commissioners, Commission Chair Julie Fedorchek, Commissioner Brian Kalk, and Commissioner Randy Christman. And I will call on the commissioner shortly for comments after addressing a few preliminary matters. The notice of hearing filed in this case on November 4, 2015, summarizes the relevant procedural background, the proposed settlement agreement, and the issue to be addressed at today's public hearing. On September 30, 2015, NSP and PSC advocacy staff filed the settlement agreement to address electric generation resource policy differences that exist between NSP's North Dakota and Minnesota jurisdictions. And the issue to be considered in this matter is whether the proposed settlement is reasonable and should be adopted by the commission. At this time, I will get appearances for the record, beginning with NSP.
Thanks, Your Honor. Zev Simser, Briggs & Morgan, on behalf of Northern States Power Company.
Allison Archer with Northern States Power.
And representing PSC advocacy staff.
John Hsu, on behalf of advocacy staff, along with me today is Mike Diller, Director of Economic Regulation.
Okay. And on behalf of Commission Advisory Staff?
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, and with me today is Jerry Lean.
Okay. And we'll just briefly touch on the procedure for today's hearing. NSP will present its case first, call any witnesses it wishes to call, and then offer any documentary evidence into the record. Any witnesses called by NSP will be subject to cross-examination by advocacy staff, commission advisory staff, and the commissioners. Once NSP completes its case, then advocacy staff will have the ability to present its case in the same manner. Are there any members of the public here today that intend to offer testimony? It doesn't appear so at this time. No decision will be reached on the matter today. The proceedings are being digitally recorded and streamed. Any questions with respect to procedures or any other preliminary matters before we move on to comments from the commissioners?
A couple, Your Honor.
Sure.
First, I believe the company and advocacy staff, subject to objection by advisory staff, have stipulated into the record the documentary evidence that has been filed already. That would be the agreement itself, the direct testimonies of the company witnesses, as well as the direct testimony of Mr. Diller. So we can just dispense with that and get those into the record, if that's okay with Your Honor.
Sure. And Mr. Simser, those exhibits that you have identified are exhibits 1, 2, 3, 4, 4A, and 5?
Yes, sir.
Is that correct? Okay. Mr. Hsu, do you have any objection to the admission of the exhibits up front?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No, we don't. Good idea. Thank
and
you.
Everybody has seen them and is familiar with what those exhibits are?
Yes,
okay.
Your Honor.
Yes.
Yes, Your Honor. The only other item, Your Honor, is the company would like to at least reserve the right to recall witnesses, should that make sense to do as part of this hearing.
Certainly. You'll have the ability to do so.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Hsu, any preliminary matters?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Nothing, thank you.
Okay. And Commissioner Kalk, is this your portfolio?
Unless I get outvoted the next meeting.
Hey, go ahead.
All right, thank you, Your Honor. The band's back together again. It's been a while since Randy and Julie and I all got together. There's a lot going on in my colleague's life, so good to see you folks again. Just a couple brief comments. I was thinking about the first time that Mark Nisbet and I and Dave Sederquist ever visited, and think about that time to where we're at now. We've come a long way, I think, in our relationship with Xcel Energy and the understanding what the North Dakota PSC is looking for. So first off, I want to thank the company for staying engaged and staying in the fight, and I think that the manner that we've dealt with these controversial decisions has always been professional, whether it's the bills or whether it's the trees or the wind farm or the different policies. And so, I mean, I've certainly read through all the testimony today on both sides, and I never prejudge, but I think you guys are headed down the right track. The one thing that I'll ask for just a question for each of you guys to address is, you know, what is it the company thought that you got out of this deal? And I think I kind of see that when I look at some of the 6 points that Mike outlined. And then also for you guys, what is it that the ratepayers got out of this? Just to put a finer point in what I think you kind of hit on in both your testimonies. But at the end of the day, I think what we're trying to get through here is get through the next 5 years, because there's so many variables out there right now in what we're doing in this business. So thank you, everyone, for the work that they've done. I don't anticipate a lot of questions, but I do want to just clarify, you know, what were some of the big sticking points, so we kind of know what might be the precursor to as we go forward on this, because we're going to have to make some tough decisions here in the next 18 months when we figure out where the Clean Power Plan is going to fall out and how the different states end up dealing with transmission inside of MISO. So it's not like this is a one and done here today, whether this is approved and we move on, and it won't work that way. Whatever happens, it's one more milestone, I think, in the relationship of the commission and Xcel. So thank you all for the work, and look forward to a good hearing.
Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Well, good morning, everyone. Appreciate the work that all the parties have done on this agreement. It's changed its direction quite considerably since it was initially the initial concept, but I think that was appropriate, and I just look forward to a good explanation of the different elements of the negotiated agreement this morning, and having the opportunity to ask questions about it and really better understand how it affects the company's relationship with North Dakota long term, how it affects the ratepayers, and you know, how it meets the needs in today's very dynamic climate. So thanks for all the hard work that's been done and the creativity brought to the table. I really appreciate that. Seems to happen a lot between NSB and our commission, so there must be some good dynamics going on there between the players, and I think that's a real positive thing. So, and then also want to just say a quick thanks to my colleagues for holding down the fort for the last week and a half, and for all the support from staff and even company folks as well. I appreciate that.
Commissioner Christman.
I think most of my comments will be better used as questions or closing comments or things when we ultimately deal with the case. I will say this. I don't know. Maybe I'm just learning more. But on something as complex as a rate case, it's always certainly helpful to have the testimony in advance. And it seems like the testimony on both sides in this case got to the point and was clearer than some of the other cases we've had. So I commend the people who provided that written testimony in that regard. One thing that I didn't understand in it that I want to point out, and so either as a result of my questions or just in the testimony in the first place, I'm not really clear on how the timing of the RTF filing came to be. It says the proposed filing date of January 1st, 2017, and 10 months for commission consideration implementation by January 1st of 2018. But I never really found any rationale for why those dates were cited as the goal. So hopefully we'll get more explanation of that. Other than that, I have no other opening comments. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Simpson, do you have an opening statement you'd like to make?
No, Your Honor. I believe our first witness, Mr. Clark, will carry the company's opening statement.
Okay. Mr. Hsu, anything before we get started?
No, Your Honor. I defer my opening comments to Michael Diller.
Okay. Mr. Simpson, you can call your first witness.
The company calls Mr. Christopher Clark to the stand.
You can be seated, Mr. Clark. That's fine. But before you testify, I'm required to give you an oath, and in doing so, I must advise you of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota. It is a Class C felony. It's punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. And being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Clark, your testimony has been entered into the record, and I believe you have an opening statement, so proceed at your leisure.
Okay. Well, thank you. Good morning, Commissioners and Judge Mann. My name is Chris Clark, and I am president of Northern States Power Company. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today regarding the reasonableness of the negotiated agreement that we have reached with staff. I'd like to first thank Commission Advocacy staff, especially Mr. Diller, for the time and effort that they've put into reaching this outcome. We've been working with staff to address these difficult issues for some time, and both parties have a new appreciation for the challenges of finding a framework to address energy policy divergence within the states we serve. I believe the negotiated agreement we are discussing today provides a reasonable outcome, and I would urge the Commission to approve it. The negotiated agreement accomplishes three key goals. First, resolving the treatment of certain past resource decisions deemed by staff and the Commission to be incompatible with North Dakota energy policies. Second, meeting a key Commission goal of developing thermal dispatchable generation in eastern North Dakota. And third, requiring the company to develop and propose a framework for a long-term resolution of the issue of divergent state energy policies in the states we serve. By resolving issues identified with some of our existing resources, we are hopeful the negotiated agreement puts us on a path to address future resource issues in a collaborative manner. With respect to past resource decisions, we accept and acknowledge that the seabed, community-based energy development resources, and small solar resources funded by the Renewable Development Fund were added to the system as a result of Minnesota policy priorities, and in the case of seabed resources, were required to be located in Minnesota. Because these resources are clearly driven by Minnesota energy policies, we've agreed to remove them from our North Dakota rates. With respect to the biomass contracts on our system, both Xcel Energy and staff recognize that although tied to a Minnesota biomass mandate, these resources were also part of the necessary compromises required to continue the operation of our nuclear fleet. Our nuclear plants provide important resource diversity for our baseload needs and have always had the support of this commission, which we appreciate. In light of that, we reached a compromise to allow continued recovery of the cost of these resources while providing a commitment to North Dakota policy priority. I believe that development of the thermal generation in eastern North Dakota will provide significant benefits, not only for our NSP system, but also for the region. This has been a commission policy goal for some time. To achieve this goal, the negotiated agreement provides a firm commitment of the company to develop such generation by the end of 2025. The negotiated agreement not only accelerates the commitment we made in our last rate case, but also further refines this commitment by providing specific requirements with respect to size, type, and timing. Additionally, our commitment recognizes the economies of scale inherent in the integrated NSP system. We can leverage these economies to make thermal generation possible on this time frame at a reasonable cost and consistent with system needs. The firmness of this commitment is reflected in the fact that we've already begun to make plans for this unit in our revised resource plan. However, because our commitment is tied to the compromises made with respect to past resources, resource decisions, the negotiated agreement holds us accountable should we, for whatever reason, fail to place a combustion turbine in service in eastern North Dakota by the end of 2025. By addressing the impact of past resource decisions and furthering a North Dakota energy priority of having us develop generation in the state, we believe we have laid the necessary groundwork to develop a long-term solution to the increasing divergence of energy policies in the states we serve. Therefore, the negotiated agreement requires us, in collaboration with staff and the Commission, to develop what we are calling a Resource Treatment Framework, or RTF. My testimony in this proceeding identifies the broad spectrum of potential outcomes that could be part of the RTF. While developing an RTF will not be easy, the negotiated agreement provides us with the time and focus that will be needed. Because we have agreed to take more time to develop the RTF, we have also agreed to extend the rate case moratorium an additional year in recognition of this fact. In total, the negotiated agreement reflects a constructive step forward as we address the difficult issues related to state divergent energy policies. I look forward to our discussion today and respectfully request that the Commission adopt the negotiated agreement. That's the end of the prepared opening that we had, and I can either address questions as you ask them, or if you want me to answer the questions that the commissioners asked in their opening statements, I can begin doing so.
We'll give counsel an opportunity first. Okay. Mr. Simpson, any questions?
Our witness is available for cross.
Okay. Mr. Hsu?
Mr. Clark, I was just wondering if you'd be able to walk us through some of the, the generation units that we're talking about and PPAs. There are six biomass facilities that are included in this agreement, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and those are equal to 140 megawatts of baseload capacity and energy?
That sounds correct.
Okay. And additionally, in the negotiated agreement, we're also talking about the inclusion of two low-cost wind projects, the Odell PPA and the Pleasant Valley wind project, correct?
Yes.
And if I remember correctly, those are both 200 megawatt?
I know one of them is. I'd have to check on the other, but
we can come back to that with a different witness. And the ones that we are looking at to be excluded are 15 community-based energy development projects, and those are, I think they're all wind?
Yes.
Okay. And two solar projects, small solar, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and of those 15 wind community-based energy development projects, those, I believe, they're from 0.8 megawatts to 50 megawatts within that range?
I'd have to check, but they were a variety of sizes, so I don't have any basis to dispute what you've said. And Kurt Hager will testify later. I'll have those details to be exact.
All right, that's all the questions I have then. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I appreciate your testimony. I recognize that you're testifying here as the president, but I know that you have a lot of experience in regulatory law, correct, prior to being appointed as president?
Yes, I came up through the law department and then into regulatory.
And I think in your bio you mentioned that you were responsible for the regulatory policy and legal questions in the four states. Prior to this. So I want to talk a little bit about basic regulatory law and but in terms that we can all understand at my level. A company can pretty much do whatever it wants to do generation-wise as long as it doesn't ask ratepayers to pay for it. Is that correct? Does the regulatory law affect the company if they're not asking ratepayers to pay for it?
In general, I would agree with you. I would qualify it to say that over the course of our regulated history, we have probably bound ourselves with various commissions about how we proceed. But in general, the concept of you can build what you want at your own risk is, I would agree with.
But you have bound yourself, so you had the choice to say, I promise to do thus and so. And that's not illegal under rate making. The flip side of that coin is what a commission can statutorily and constitutionally do. And I would like to get at that question of whether a commission, in your opinion, can ask ratepayers to pay or not pay for a particular generation if the reason is not based on the standard concept of an asset being used and useful. Can a commission order a ratepayer to pay for an asset that the commission does not find is used and useful? Can a commission tell a ratepayer they don't have to pay for an asset that is used and useful?
Your Honor, just prior to my witness answering that question, to the extent it draws a legal conclusion, I think we'd be happy to brief those types of issues. Although the witness is an attorney by training, he's no longer a practicing attorney and is not an attorney for the company at this point. So if it's asking him to draw a legal conclusion, we'd be happy to brief that issue. But Mr. Clark should feel free to answer if he thinks he can add to that discussion.
So you're not objecting to him answering the question? You just are asking for an opportunity to be able to brief it?
At this point, perfect. That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
That's perfect with me. That's perfect. That's just what I wanted. Perfect.
Well, Mr. Clark, I guess if you can answer that, you can go ahead then.
Okay. So as I recall, you had a two-part question. Can a commission authorized ratepayers to pay for something that they otherwise find not to be used and useful? And I think the answer to that is yes. I think a commission has that authority to look to other parts of its statutory framework to find a reason that a commission finds that acceptable and in the best interests of customers. The corollary then was, can a commission disallow costs that it finds are used and useful? I think that's probably a more complicated question that would have to get at how that resource came before the commission. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I think it's a tougher question, that second one.
And I follow you as far as you went, and I appreciate I was just planning on asking for that to be briefed, so this is good, but I still would like your perspective as a witness. So when you said it depends on how the resource came before the commission, what are you thinking of there, practically speaking? You know, what would a company be doing to bring something before the commission in one way that would say yes and one way that would say no to that question?
I think you'd look at the context of how that utility does resource planning and acquisition in conjunction with that commission. And I think you'd also then look at, are you considering whether it's a new asset or is it an existing asset? So, for instance, if we were talking about raising questions about an asset that had already been put in rates, I think that's maybe a more complicated issue than an asset that's not. So, for instance, our nuclear plants, I think you'd go back to the decisions made at the time of we're putting these nuclear plants in as part of our plan over the long term to serve our customers. What sort of back and forth was there between the utility commissions and the company in reaching those decisions, and what sort of commitments were made to that? I think that's probably a different question than a new resource that's being contemplated that would come before a commission. So those are places where I would start to draw distinctions and want more context around what are the other pieces pulling at that decision and that statutory framework.
So you're saying that the commission is going to end up balancing certain things, one of which is the standard used and useful concept. But I'm still having trouble with what those other things might be that might be strong enough to outweigh the basic regulatory obligation of the commission.
I
need more of an example from you if you can give it to me.
Well, I mean, I guess I think if the basis of the foundation is that an asset is used and useful, and now we're looking at the question of why should it be disallowed, certainly commissions have other factors that they use in judging the public interest, which can be other statutory requirements, other pricing requirements. So what is that commission's approach to resource planning? other previous directions the commission has given that company, I think those are all factors that can weigh into it.
And you think they can trump the basic analysis of whether the asset is providing electricity reasonably priced?
Objection calls for a legal conclusion.
Okay. Well, I hope that NSP will point out the statutory authority for using those other factors that might outweigh
the basic statutory requirement of the commission. That's all I have. Well, I have, excuse me, one more maybe from Jerry here. Okay. That's all we have. Thanks.
Okay. Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Chris, for your testimony. And Alana, thank you for fleshing out the we've only talked about this about every day, you and I, for the last 6 years. But to follow up on what Alana was saying, I mean, it's interesting what the company's offered up in this. And like I said in my opening comments, I think that, for me, I think we can find a path forward here. But I've always felt that just because we disallow something in advance determination of prudence doesn't mean it's not going to come back to us in a rate case, no matter what kind of electron it is. And so that's kind of the core, I think, going forward of how we would structure an RTF, because I like what you guys have done up to the RTF, and I think it's a good concept. But if that was changed from 1 year to 3 years, would that bother you, that time frame, if you got more time to work through that?
No, it would not. I would be comfortable with more time. I think my view of the time pressure is a desire of those working with us, the staff in particular, to have us not disappear on the issue and to stay focused on it. I'm generally a believer that momentum and time pressure are good, but there is a lot of uncertainty right now, and having some additional time, I think, here certainly could be beneficial given the amount of moving pieces. I get impatient sometimes and would like to charge forward with a solution, but to really be deliberative and let the public process play out oftentimes takes a lot more time, and clearly there are a lot of complexities moving around in our industry right now, so I would be comfortable with more time.
Well, I guess that'll probably become an issue as we go down the road here, but I think that the point of what I was trying to get across in the rate case, certainly Xcel heard that. We had a lot of discussion about the 12 CP and the 1 CP, and I see that's one of the points in the settlement agreement. So obviously you heard us on that issue. And to me, that must have been one of the bedrock principles. But it's when you look at the potential solutions for an RTF separating North Dakota as its own company, may sound good at first blush, but I don't want to lose access to that nuclear power that's generated in Minnesota. And so I know that a lot of those things, like you brought up, the biomass, the offsets that Xcel has to give to get that thing approved by the Minnesota legislature, I've come to learn a lot more about that as well. And so going forward, do you think that there's a role for the North Dakota Commission in dealing with the renewing of your licensing in Minnesota? It seems like that becomes almost like a lever that trips so much for you in that state.
I would welcome any involvement the North Dakota Commission wants to have with regard to our resource plan in particular, including nuclear power. Since becoming president, nuclear is one of the things that has really been a focus of trying to understand how it fits into our resource planning and how it fits into what we want to accomplish and how it fits into our energy future. There are a lot of challenges pushing on the nuclear industry. We are trying to take a very thoughtful, long-term view, and so I would welcome any participation, and I think that participation of the North Dakota Commission could be helpful in us analyzing the issues that we're facing with nuclear power.
Well, that's probably a little separate discussion than today, but I think it is the trigger that you find yourself involved in when you get these different resources mix coming your way. So what was the big win that if there was such a thing that the settlement agreement that you feel you received for your company, and then what was the thing that you'd like to have seen? If you could have got one more thing out of it.
I could have had one more. I think the big win for us is the willingness of the staff to give us the time to consider constructing an RTF that continues the integrated system, while also recognizing that we may not get there and separation may become the more attractive conclusion at the end of the day. I think that is one of the big wins. I think another one was that we got the staff to reconsider the position on the biomass. And I have always struggled with the seabed statutes requiring the Minnesota the generation to be located in Minnesota. That nonetheless was a choice, and I think the willingness to look at the seabed wind differently than the biomass is something that I considered a win. It I think helps us find explore more ways to try to get to a solution with the RTF.
So how big a discussion was the 12CP being written into the final settlement agreement?
I think there was always an acknowledgement that the 12CP was a critical element of the deal, and I probably would point to Dave for a better answer than I can give on that just because he was in the negotiations. I think we considered getting the 12CP as a fundamental in the pieces that were put together.
Because it's so much money, it puts at risk potentially.
Correct.
Okay. So how would it work if we, okay, so we let's just say for discussion we prove this, then we find ourselves in the RTF discussion. How do you envision that playing out with the knowing that there's so much uncertainty around energy policy in the country that there could be some solution that you put together that the courts say, no, it doesn't work, or the courts, it's fundamentally wrong with what changes around us. How can you even begin to put something like that together?
When I think about trying to find a solution to for the RTF and, quite frankly, for the approach to a system that has us as a utility in both North Dakota and Minnesota, it's really a focus on how can we build the best long-term portfolio for our customers. What can we do that lets us build the best long-term solution with the principles that we think have guided us well to the present, which is diversity of the system, which is a focus on how do we, over the long term, continue to serve our customers at reasonable cost, and how do we position ourselves to be...
How do you do that with all the uncertainty? Would I mean, could we just go back to say that at the end of this is done. There would be no more RTF. We go back to traditional rate-making principles and back to Alana's point about used and useful. Could you just go the other extreme, just say there is no RTF, where we settle this up where we're at now and we move forward? Could that become a possibility too?
I think it could. I think I probably view that on the more optimistic side of the line, where that would, I think, require both the North Dakota Commission and the other commissions on our system getting comfortable that out of our resource plan, out of these decisions, is a good mix of generation resources and is a good mix of policy choices, given the uncertainty that we face and given the other things that we're trying to balance. So one of the big motivators for me is not letting the retirement of all of our baseload units stack up between 2030 and 2040. And so I think to the extent that in a world of uncertainty, in a world where there's a lot of legal issues like suing the EPA to play out, I think it requires getting comfortable that what we're presenting is a good, solid path forward that has benefits for customers in all of our states. If we can get there and not have to deal with the intricacies or complexities of an RTF, that's the best solution in my book. I just don't want to kid myself that that's going to be an easy thing to accomplish.
Isn't that kind of where we're at, though? I mean, you kind of know what you're going to get when you come over here and ask for things. The challenge is what you have to ask for, given the hands you're dealt in Minnesota. I mean, I don't think that we're very – I think we're pretty consistent in what we're doing over here. So, I mean, I'm trying to figure out. On one hand, we have – I don't think 1 year is enough time if we're going to do an RTF. So I think it needs to be two or more. The other hand, I'm thinking, what if we just square this thing up now and we go back to business like we used to? Would which one of those would you prefer? Given what you know at this point in time.
It's a really
because what does an RTF give you? A framework, what will that give you that you don't have now? Maybe is a better way to phrase the question. Because knowing that it could be appealed back to Lana's point, if we agree some framework and somebody says, well, you didn't follow the used and useful provision, so they appeal it and it rolls back and then the whole thing unravels. I think that's where the general counsel is going.
I think it's a matter of how you look at what the what the function of the RTF is going forward. I think to the extent that this commission is comfortable going forward without that and is comfortable that some sort of an ADP process provides enough input for this commission, that's one way to approach it. The concern that we have is we'd like to build something in an RTF that provides greater long-term certainty so that we're not in what I think is described in testimony as have something approved or ordered by one commission, know that we're then going to go to the North Dakota Commission and have the North Dakota Commission say, that's not really something we're interested in. Go back to the initial commission and say, okay, here's the share of those costs. We need you to recover those. And then, quite frankly, that opens the door for the Wisconsin Commission to say, why don't you come on over here? We'd like to talk to you about that. And at some point, the concern is that that kind of a construct becomes too cumbersome of a regulatory process and really starts to impede the long-term planning of the system. So I think the hope of an RTF is that you can get to a better long-term solution, and the hope of getting beyond the RTF and getting what I would consider the commissions back to, we understand there are some trade-offs and compromises in the overall system, but we're actually comfortable with the overall system, with the mix of resources, even some things we don't like and some things that we really like. That's obviously the easiest for us. So on the spectrum of things that, from the company's perspective, we'd like, that would clearly be the most satisfying. It might not be the most satisfying to the commission, who's trying to address the objective of making sure that they feel their state policy is respected.
Should there be some statute changes that get put into North Dakota law if we go down the road of RTF? That's another discussion that could go back to Alana's point. Have you thought, did that come up at all in the discussion?
I defer to Dave on what came up in the discussion. I think certainly to the extent that we identified here's a good framework and a statutory clarification would be helpful to making sure that the commission feels it has the authority, we'd be very open to that. I'm not aware, based on what we're talking about at this point, that we need one, but I think certainly we've talked about that possibility could arise.
Okay, and the last question I have, if we did go to just one NS, back to the old days, NSP North Dakota, how would that functionally lay out? I'm sure you've thought about it. I know your preference is not to do that in your testimony, but how would that lay out?
Sort of the separation.
Right.
We've looked at...
You make Mark president of NSP North Dakota, and you can still be his boss, but you let him deal with all these things over here.
Are you ready for that, Mark? We've looked at two iterations of separation. One is a full formal legal separation so that NSP North Dakota would become like the NSP Wisconsin system is. Then you put in a formal filing with FERC to create an interchange agreement and go down the path of separate legal entity, formal agreements at wholesale approved by FERC. The challenge with the formal legal separation is that there are some complexities that make that more expensive. And there are some issues that you start getting into then with how do you separate the transmission assets, what MISO zone are you in, so that the legal separation could become more expensive and more complicated than we would like. The other arrangement that we've considered is what I call a wholesale light, which is you treat North Dakota as if it's a wholesale, but it's not through a FERC filing. It's through an arrangement acknowledged by both states that we're essentially looking at serving the North Dakota system as if they were a PPA wholesale off-taker. This is the stack of resources that makes that up. We need both commissions to agree that that's an appropriate way to do it and recognize that in their allocation of costs between the states. It has the advantage of being probably quicker and less legally cumbersome than a legal separation. We think we could avoid needing to go to FERC. We think we could avoid those transmission issues. But it would require both commissions to say, yes, we agree to that.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you, Chris.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. Couple follow-ups to Commissioner Culk. I was kind of thinking the same, having some of the same questions with in regard to the current process. You know, as time has evolved and discussions of this, the restack and all of this, I've been finding myself thinking more and more that using the ADP process and reviewing these resource additions on a, you know, case-by-case basis and looking at whether it makes sense from a need and cost and making a decision, that's a process that's been used for a long, long time and has worked well. And maybe that just makes sense to continue using that process. You kind of got to some of the reasons, so thank you for that explanation about the problems that you see evolving from that process long term from the company standpoint, having to go back and forth and back and forth. So what has really changed? Why does that process not work anymore? What are the key things that has happened in the last maybe 5 years or longer that has created the problems in that process that's been used for, you know, I don't know how many decades prior to this?
I think I would point to a couple of things. If we look over the history here, I think what one of the things I take away is that we're the revisiting of the legacy decisions like the seabed and the biomass creates tension. Mm-hmm. In the process and starts to put at risk for us the recovery of some pretty significant dollars. And the biomass, I think, really underscores that. Second, I think that if you look at the externality issue, whether to use we use externalities in Minnesota, mm-hmm. We don't use them in North Dakota, I think it can start to create our resource plan for North Dakota and this is our resource plan for Minnesota, and at some point they completely break apart. And I think when they start to completely break apart, it leads people to then start questioning the base. And so you start to hear things like, well, fine, if that jurisdiction doesn't want this, then I'm not sure they should get that. And I think that starts to really start to pull at the foundational strings of the integrated system. Mm-hmm. So what we've been trying to do is find a way, either through a restack, an RTF, or an acceptance on the overall direction of the resource plan, that this is a good outcome for all jurisdictions and get the jurisdictions comfortable with that. One of the reasons I think thermal generation in North Dakota is helpful to that end is it's a recognition that the North Dakota Commission and the company believe there are good reasons to put thermal generation in North Dakota and essentially ask the Minnesota Commission to acknowledge that as part of our planning process, in which we're clearly moving forward with things that are consistent with the Minnesota policy. And starts to reflect that, just like North Dakota supported biomass through the years, we're asking Minnesota to support what we think is a good long-term view of an integrated, reliable grid. And so that's why I favor a solution that continues the integrated system, mm-hmm. and that's why I'm looking for a solution that isn't doing the case-by-case. I do think at the end of the day, the case by case will start to pull at those foundational strings of if the North Dakota jurisdiction doesn't want X, then we're not going to let them have Y. And I think that puts us in a really tough spot, all of us.
Mm-hmm. So is it really the activism among states and state legislators on driving certain energy policy goals that's brought us here?
I think...
Because you have to do certain things to meet them, and you're bound by that, and then we don't have the same goals, so we don't feel bound by them, and in some respects feel like we can't support them.
I think that's part of it. I certainly think that as we've done more to pursue energy policy in Minnesota, it has felt like we're actively working against the North Dakota energy policy. That said, when I work with Kurt on putting together our resource plan, I continue to believe that there is a best path forward that continues an integrated system and balances some of these diverging viewpoints. I think there are ways for us to proceed that acknowledge differences, but still let that integrated system go forward. Mm-hmm. And I think it requires some compromise. And I think one of the open questions is whether that compromise is attractive to each state enough to feel that, well, it may not be perfectly consistent with their energy policy, it's a good long-term choice for the customers that are served in that state, and so it's an acceptable compromise.
Are you, as a company, involved in the legislative process in Minnesota to explain some of the challenges that these very specific energy policy goals that they create might have on the integrated system? Because it's one thing, I mean, to get the commission's sort of buying off on this, but the commissions are beholden to what the legislature, the policy the legislature develops. And so if the commissions understand the integrated system, maybe the legislators don't quite understand that as much. So is the company putting that in front of these policymakers on a regular basis, saying, you know, you can create these things, but here's the impact it has. Here are the things we have to balance.
Yes, we're very active at the legislature. We think it's important that we're there as an information source, that we are there with credibility, and that we're there to advocate for what we believe is the right approach to these issues. Sometimes that we believe that helps create understanding among the legislatures, even if it doesn't always get codified in the law or the legislation that's passed,
mm-hmm.
And puts us in a better footing when we're in front of the commission. So, for instance, with the community-based solar that we're actively pursuing in Minnesota, we've really tried to be clear that we thought those costs should flow to Minnesota and should flow to Minnesota only. And that's consistent with our view of what that program was and how it came about and the discussions that started at the legislative session in 13 and went all the way through the administrative process before the commission. We've at times tried to get the statutes to reflect that we think certain costs should go in one direction or another, and that's a conversation that I think sometimes legislators say, really, that looks like an area where the commission has more expertise than we do. So it's the legislative process, and there's always a lot going on in the legislature, but we do try to participate actively and help shape good outcomes there.
Okay. Little different angle here. Do you know what the costs of the seabed projects are that are being removed?
I recall testimony that had a per-year dollar figure attached to it, which I don't believe is trade secret, which was the $1.6 million per year.
Okay. Thanks.
Kurt Hager's testimony on page 9 of the trade secret, or no, the public document, sorry, page 9 of the public.
Okay. There we go. All right. And then, let's see here. In terms of I have two questions on the thermal generation in North Dakota. you've stated a number of times that that's been a goal of the commission, and I've been hearing that a lot since I've been here. Is that a meaningful goal for this commission? And if so, why, from your perspective? Should we be advocating for that?
I think it is a meaningful goal. I think it's a good goal for North Dakota and therefore a good goal for the commission. I'm not an electrical engineer. I don't operate the system, but I work with our folks who do, and I work with Kurt on putting together the resource plan. I point to two things that I think show that it's a reasonable and a good goal for the commission. One is that we had an ice storm that affected our southern Minnesota and South Dakota service territories, and Sioux Falls, which we serve in South Dakota, benefited from having the Angus Anson natural gas plant nearby to help support the system as we recovered and from that ice storm, which had taken down transmission lines. Second, the TransCanada gas event, I think, shows that things can happen that we don't expect, and having generation nearer to your load centers and diversely spread around your system can be a good thing. So as a utility, we kind of go back and forth between the let's centralize everything and keep it nearby, then we can operate as a one fleet focus and get crews, move them around to different plants. Mm-hmm. And so that tends to have you resist moving things more geographically dispersed. On the other hand, when we look at events, weather, and other things that affect our system, we like the idea of having generation spread around our system. The point that we've really not talked a lot about, but I think we're going to talk a lot more about going forward, is that as we try to make our grid more secure from a grid security and a grid resiliency standpoint, I think having more diversified generation portfolios will be looked at as beneficial. And I think continuing to look at how we, for the long term, build a robust energy infrastructure is going to become more important. And so when I talk about resiliency, usually we use that term in regard to weather events. When we talk about security, we're talking about cyber, and more we're talking about physical security. Mm-hmm. And I think we've spent time on that. I think we're going to spend a lot more time on that going forward. And so I think those are all good reasons why getting thermal generation in North Dakota is helpful. I also think as North Dakota continues to add wind, which it's likely to do, primarily because you have a great wind resource here in North Dakota, but also because of things like Clean Power Plan, having some nearby gas generation to help balance that can be a good thing as well.
Okay, great. And then finally, what issues do you anticipate with the Minnesota Commission on that thermal project in North Dakota?
Well, there's a question. I see if they're listening. why don't we start with Lake North Dakota, but governed by their own statutes, the Minnesota Commission, I think, is going to want to make sure that what we're advancing in our resource plan is a good long-term plan for our customers and the state. And so I think they're going to want to make sure that the resource mix that we're selecting is good for the long-term, is consistent with Minnesota policies, and that our choices of what we're advocating, citing the gas or thermal generation in North Dakota and citing the gas thermal generation at the site where we're proposing to close the Sherco 1 and Sherco 2 sites are the best overall choice for the system. And I expect them to want us to really make a thorough record about that. So that's the opening. I think that based on the questions asked at the resource plan meeting and at our interim rate case hearing in Minnesota in December, at least a couple of commissioners want to understand the costs that we've put in for nuclear. We tried to be transparent about what we think it's going to cost to operate our nuclear units through their current lives, 30 for Monticello and 33 and 34 for Prairie Island. And I think that the commission wants to understand those. I have one commissioner in Minnesota who is openly opposed to nuclear energy, and I think wants to understand whether we're trying to lock them into life after 60. We're not. What we're trying to do is be clear about what we think it costs to operate those units through their current lives as best we can, because we're predicting out quite a ways. And then secondly, we did say we want to begin the discussion about what life after 60 looks like. What's the process by which we want to decide that? Recognizing we probably won't make that decision today, but it's also the NRC. So you ought to give yourself a good 10 years if you think you're going down that mm-hmm. path. And it may affect the decisions you're making through the course of the 20s if you think you're going to operate them for another 20 after their current life. You may invest differently. Likewise, if you're not going to operate them after their current life. So I think that's a big question that folks are, that the commission in Minnesota is starting to dig into, and I think is a fair one for all the commissions to dig into.
How does that affect the thermal discussion in North Dakota?
I think in some ways the nuclear discussion is a separate discussion. Mm-hmm. Unless you start asking the question, should we close Prairie Island units 1 and 2 before the end of their current life? And then if you back that question up even more and say, well, how early could I close those units? It's a big decision to take on closing 2 nuclear units at Prairie Island, assuming you leave Monticello alone, because we've gone through the LCM EPU and made the significant investment in that plant. So just putting PI 1 and 2 on the table, it's a big decision if you're going to say, I don't want to operate those because I think just building some combined cycle gas plants would be cheaper. And I also want to close 2 coal units. You're going to end up adding a lot of combined cycle gas, we think, to the system if you head down that path. So I think there are some points of intersection. Mm-hmm. I think the reality is, in one sense, the nuclear issue is a big decision to make. But I don't view that as a today decision, but the commission in Minnesota may. And then we have all the other elements of the resource plan. And to the extent you want to understand the full picture, it's fair game. Mm-hmm. I think the third thing the Minnesota Commission is going to test is the extent to which you need to use gas as the bridge to an all-renewable or much more renewable future. And Kirk can certainly give you our view of what the economics of that look like, but I think the Commission likely wants to have that dialogue as part of the resource process as the resource plan plays out. Mm-hmm. All that said, the Minnesota Commission will tell us what they want to hear, so I'm providing you as best I can based on how that record's played out and the limited interaction we've had with those commissioners, some of the things I think they may be interested in.
Have they been in the past suspicious of the need for a North Dakota facility like this? Like, or the benefits of it for the system?
Sure. I fully expect that we'll get is that the best choice for the system overall? Is it more expensive to put it in North Dakota? And if you put it in North Dakota, does that make North Dakota happy and we don't have to have any more of these discussions about whether or not they're in or out of the integrated system? Mm-hmm. So I would expect, maybe I'm being more blunt than I should, but that's just things that I think are going to get asked. I think there are good answers to all those questions that support putting thermal generation in North Dakota, but I think we'll have to go through those.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think that's all my questions. Thanks.
Commissioner Christman.
Good morning, Chris. When we talk about these jurisdictional differences, are we talking about almost exclusively North Dakota and Minnesota, or do you have the same issues between your other the other three states in addition to these two?
North Dakota has been the most explicit through your orders and the most vocal engaging in this dialogue that we're having here and working with staff on the restack and the negotiated agreement that's in front of you. So very, very clearly North Dakota and Minnesota have been the leaders in having the discussion about the differences of their views on this. That said, we certainly have heard concerns from South Dakota and Wisconsin. And so far, those concerns have not translated into the type of order points or the type of requests for formal actions that we've had with North Dakota. Certainly, when we filed our resource plan reply on October 2nd and began talking about that, the Wisconsin Commission and the South Dakota Commission have both asked to understand more about that informally with the staff and I think supporting commissioners, but not yet the type of formal activity that we've had with North Dakota.
And when you say concerns from South Dakota and Wisconsin, are those concerns or objections to some of the things that Minnesota has been doing? Are concerns or objections to what North Dakota is doing?
So with our October 2nd filing, the concerns have been wanting to understand, is our decision to move forward with what we've proposed there driven solely by the Clean Power Plan? If not, what is it driven by? Come in and help us understand what you're doing, why you think it's the right approach. That's been the level of inquiry around the resource plan. I think both South Dakota and Wisconsin recognize that resource planning is a complex activity, and so they know when they hear something they're interested in to call us and ask us to come and explain and hear those details. I also know that with the community-based solar, we've had the staff and commissions in South Dakota and in Wisconsin express informally concerns about where those policies are going and the costs of those.
Does the RTF that you would be working on here for the next couple years require Minnesota approval too, or is this just something that you're working on with the North Dakota Commission?
I think what we're envisioning with the RTF is something that we think would help us reach a good outcome with North Dakota and be something we can take to Minnesota and say this is a good outcome for the overall system and ask the Minnesota Commission to accept it as well. Otherwise, our concern is that something's getting stranded and Minnesota is saying you should take those costs and go recover them from North Dakota, and North Dakota will say no or say no, those don't fit within the RTF. And I think for us, having the clarity on the front end is one of the advantages of the RTF, to be able to go with the framework and say, look, this is how we can continue to operate an integrated system that North Dakota views as consistent enough with its energy policy and resource planning principles. And we think that this allows us to advance the Minnesota policies consistent with the Minnesota legislative policies and resource planning and acquisition framework.
Regarding the thermal addition within the next decade, is it the beginning of 2025 or into 2025? I forget now.
I don't recall.
Well, either way, that's not so important. There's a penalty provision built in if that does not materialize. Is that correct?
Yes.
And if Minnesota does not approve of that project, it wouldn't be built, correct? Because you'd have a whole lot of your investment not getting recovery.
I think the best answer I can give you to that is I think you're correct. I don't think it would get built. I've not conceded that that a Minnesota no completely precludes us, but it's a much tougher hill to climb.
If it did not materialize and it was because Minnesota didn't approve it, does that negate the penalty provision, or does the penalty provision still apply?
My understanding is that that penalty provision is not contingent on the Minnesota approval. I defer to the lawyers to tell me if I'm wrong, as counsel previously suggested they should do. But.
I believe Mr. Cedarquist can talk to a lot of the specifics of the agreement.
Okay. And, you know, I think it can be viewed as a penalty or an incentive. I mean, if you look at the framework that we started coming in from the restack, it was that we were facing exclusion of all the biomass costs. And to Commissioner Kalk's earlier question, I view that as important, that we were able to get those back into the fold, and getting the thermal generation in is an incentive for us to be able to keep those. Incentives, penalties, maybe semantics, but.
Okay, I have some more questions on the details of that, but I'll save those for Mr. Cedarquist then. But I do have one more that I want to ask you as president.
Okay.
Do you think from the Minnesota Commission's perspective that their decision on approval of that thermal generation is going to be impacted by this commission's decision on the gas plant that's before us in another case right now?
Yes, there could be interplay there, but that, I mean, I guess that's educated speculation on my part, but...
You've got a lot of background. You've testified to your expertise.
Yes, I think it's fair to say that there could be some interplay there. It would depend on how the decision was written and all those things, but I do think there could be some.
Okay, and then I want to jump to what I mentioned earlier, the timing of the RTF, and Commissioner Kalk talked about it too, whether that's enough time or whether that should be extended some more, and as I understood it, your comment was that perhaps additional time would be good, but our advocacy staff felt that we wanted to make sure the company stays on task. I have that pretty well correct?
You do. I think we would certainly welcome more time and would commit to staying on task, but I think that was the driver of the timing. And again, I think Mr. Cedarquist and Mr. Diller can probably shed more light on that.
Well, I'm very grateful of our advocacy staff of wanting to make sure that you stay on task. But in this particular case, here's the outside factor that I wonder whether it weighs in. Barring other changes, my understanding is a lot of states will seek and receive exemptions from the timelines of doing state implementation plans for the Clean Power Plan. And those exemptions will probably allow them to go to late 2018, knowing that, at least how it looks from at this moment in time, that a lot of state implementation plans will be completed during 2018. Would adding another year on here seem like a logical thing? It's not completely throwing out deadlines, but it would get final approval past what we expect to be the deadline for SIPs.
Commissioner, I think that's a very fair way to look at the external forces. Certainly, we are happy to support the agreement as we entered it with the staff, advocacy staff. But I also think that the factors you point out are very valid. I will just say on the state implementation plans, particularly when you look at what North Dakota is trying to figure out, the benefits of knowing at least preliminarily what the state thinks its path is on the SIP, even setting aside the litigation, and then knowing where your neighbors are going and getting some sense of whether there are regional solutions, I think those are very important pieces to the future of resource planning for for both utility companies and for states and for those like advocacy staff who participate in this process and help try to make sure we come to good outcomes for customers. I do also think, and I keep pushing our folks, that as we work to shape those and help create the best possible outcomes for customers, we also have to keep our eye on the ball of figuring out what we think is the right next infrastructure to develop. I think one of the dangers that utility companies can fall into is that we start getting into a waiting for something to finish and putting off decisions that we shouldn't put off. And then a bunch of utilities are all trying to do the same thing at once, and it ends up pushing the cost to get that accomplished higher for customers. So I think we have to make sure that we're being thoughtful about the process, getting as much information as we could. We also have to keep our eye on the ball on keeping things moving as appropriate so that we're positioned to come and tell you, I think we need to get going on that now, even though we don't know what the final outcome of all the details are going to be.
And lastly, we end with an easy one for you. If we extended that another year for the RTF to get to the end of 2018 and have seen SIPs, would it be reasonable then to also extend the moratorium on a new rate case for one more year to the end of 2018? Well, seriously, so that all three go together. You know, you're not guessing and doing a rate case and then 6 months later starting a new one because you found out the SIP changed something you didn't expect or the RTF changed something you didn't expect.
I want to be careful with the answer because, and I think my answer is I'm not comfortable extending the rate moratorium without going and looking at what we think our other revenue pressures might be outside of generation. I don't want to start shortchanging our ability to come in and get recovery of distribution costs, transmission costs that are unrelated to these issues that float around in the RTF. That said, I think we're certainly willing to continue to, the decision of whether or not to file a rate case or not is always one that we view as we're happy to have a conversation with advocacy staff about whether there's something that we could do to avoid it or come up with another mechanism to provide the regulatory certainty to not put negative pressure on the investments we think we need for reliable, safe electric service.
Okay. Thank you. No other questions. Okay.
Mr. Simpson, any follow-up questions?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Hsu?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Two areas. The first one is this IRP discussion, because almost every person asking you questions has gotten into a discussion of integrated resource planning. And when you were talking with Commissioner Calk about what might be the company's preference, what does this give you that normal rate making doesn't? Those kinds of questions, Jerry and I are thinking, wouldn't it just be best for all of these areas if we, as a North Dakota Commission, moved to a required IRP, which it's not required now. It's you submit it to us, but we don't have a mandate on you. A required IRP and an approval process. And then doesn't, if the Commission actually had to deal with your IRP and say, this is a good plan for the next 5 years, and did that every 2 years or whatever it is, doesn't that make all the rest of these questions kind of go away?
Not necessarily. I certainly think that's an option that this commission has, and we'd be happy to participate in that if this commission feels that is a good way to oversee our resource planning. I think the challenges we've found with the resource planning process, particularly if you start having multiple resource plans in multiple jurisdictions, not only do you have some of the differences in the policies, but you'll also start to have differences in the timing mm-hmm. of, you know, what sales forecast are you using, mm-hmm. Do you shrink it down to try to go to the granular level and let's use a North Dakota specific sales forecast? I think at some point having resource plans running in parallel can create as many issues as they can solve.
Okay, well, I recognize that, but I had been thinking that, yes, you still have those questions. You have the what's the sales forecast in every ADP that comes up here. So you still get those questions in piecemeal at all these different points in time, and if you just had them hashed out and decided for good or for bad at each point in planning, you'd know the answers before you made the investment and before you took the position, and you could challenge it and all of that. And what I was hearing seemed in your answers to like Commissioner Calk and others was seemed to be leading Jerry and I at least around to maybe that's the solution, because the other piece part of it is, to me, in my opinion, and you can share yours and Zev can share his, that's one of the magic ways you might be able, a commission might be able to get around the obligation at the end on the used and useful, because the IRP decision is made with the best information possible, looking forward. So would they ever be asking for it? I'm guessing I'm hearing no. And would they object to it if that's the way the commission chose to go?
Right now, it's not been a solution that we've identified as likely to get to the overall solution that we think is in the best interest of all of our customers. So it's not likely to be something we'd ask for. That said, we certainly recognize the authority of the commission to proceed down that path. And if the commission thinks that that's beneficial, we would work to try to make it constructive and beneficial. I think we've been trying to focus on something that acknowledges the differences that are there and tries to find a way to solve them. Restack, RTF, general overall happiness with the direction of the resource plan as being overall satisfactory to all customers.
Okay.
Being kind of that spectrum.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I want to reiterate, if I'm hearing you correctly, the company at this point in time thinks that these other problems we all recognize that can come up about how you do it and which model and what inputs and all of those other things would be so bad that this would not be a helpful way to resolve this issue between the states, that they would just cause more trouble than they would solve. Is that the company's thoughts on this?
I think pursuing the RTF right now, we believe, is more likely to lead to a better long-term solution.
Okay.
I'm not sure I want to agree with everything that you had in the
yeah.
in the setup to your question,
yeah.
just because we've been headed down one path. I haven't spent as much time thinking about that path, so my initial reaction right now is that the path we're on is the result of a lot of hard work to get us here trying to solve this. And we think that's where our efforts should continue. We're certainly willing to think about other things as we
okay.
do this.
And I appreciate the caveat, but I also would like the company to be thinking about it, because maybe that's what it boils down to as we all think about this more and more. The other area I wanted to talk to you about is page 7 of the agreement, the other terms and conditions, the environmental attributes paragraph. As I understand that paragraph, page 7 of the agreement, of the actual agreement, not of the docket item of November 30th that says negotiated agreement on it, because that's testimony, but the actual agreement, Exhibit 1, the environmental attributes, as I see that, you know, there's a statement in there, but there is no, like, company and staff agree provision, correct?
Well, I had read 6A on 7 to be part of the agreement.
Right, but I'm trying to figure out who's agreed to what in that paragraph, and I think it looks more like an assertion of the company that, of course, you're asking the commission to buy and then order by if adopting the agreement. But the sentence that concerns us is the last one. At its own discretion and without further approval, the company will be free to use the attributes created from a resource for which the costs are not recoverable from its North Dakota customers. Is it appropriate to have that in there, given what we do not know about the Clean Power Plan and implementation of it?
Oh, I see where you're going.
And since there is no staff agrees to this and company agrees to that in that paragraph, I'm thinking.
Well, I didn't mean
not. Go ahead. No, I asked you, is it appropriate in your mind to have it in there?
This is appropriate in my mind, and I can give you some clarity on my understanding of what this paragraph provides, and I think that it'd probably be fair for you to ask Mr. Diller and Mr. Cedarquist as well what they intended when they were in the negotiating room. I think really what we were trying to accomplish here was the recognition that there have already been some resources turned back from North Dakota or rejected, and that to the extent that we can take the environmental attributes, the renewable energy credits associated with those, and use those in a program that's part of something we offer on our system elsewhere, that in essence gives us an opportunity to mitigate what we have to ask the Minnesota Commission for recovery of. So, as an example, the 187-megawatt solar, this commission said no to that. The environmental attributes associated with the solar that was rejected here, we might want to offer in a voluntary program that for customers who want their energy to be greener than it otherwise is coming from us, would be willing to sign up and pay whatever the pricing is under that program, then that reduces what we have to recover from all customers in Minnesota when we go to the Minnesota Commission and say this was turned back. So we're trying to make lemonade out of the the issue here. Maybe that's wrong. You know what I mean. I'm sorry.
Well, and that makes perfect sense if you limit the discussion to the things that the commissions, who's paying and who's getting credit and what they're paying, things that are within the jurisdiction of the two commissions. It makes perfect sense, but I don't think it's written that narrowly. And what's concerned, I know nothing about this Clean Power Plan or what's going to happen with the credit used loosely for the various renewable generation and who's going to benefit and who's going to get a right to claim it. So I see that potential impact of this as not appropriate, in my mind, in this agreement. And perhaps nobody ever intended it to extend that far, but I think it's written broadly. And I assumed intentionally broadly by the company. But that's something I think you should at least consider and perhaps talk to staff about. If you can see, I'm drawing a line, but I don't know exactly how to draw it because I don't know enough about what's happening with the Clean Power. But trying to draw a line between things that are jurisdictional to two commissions in the two states versus Health Department and EPA and whoever else. You understand what I'm asking you to think about over the break?
I appreciate the issue you're raising, and I think we can take it up with so that when, at least from our standpoint, Mr. Cedarquist takes the stand, Dave can help give our understanding of that. I don't know that we very well may have written it broadly with the hopes of having this be the Clean Power Plan solution, but I would agree with you that there is more unknown than known about state implementation plans and solutions under the Clean Power Plan. So I think we can take a look at the issue you raised and maybe provide some greater clarity as the proceeding unfolds.
Okay, that's all I have. Thanks.
Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chris, just a couple follow-ups to the follow-ups to the follow-ups. The Alana fleshed out a point that I wanted to – I think I'm hearing you say that because this commission has rejected the ADP that you would no longer – on the 187-megawatt solar, that you'd never come back and ask for the rate recovery on that?
I'm happy to come back and ask for the rate recovery, but I think part of what we're trying what we're trying to solve with this is some things that have been rejected by the North Dakota Commission we think are appropriate for us to go back and ask the Minnesota Commission to recover from Minnesota.
I don't know if they've been rejected. They've been determined to not be prudent at this time, and we've had yet to have the discussion on used and useful in a rate case.
And I appreciate that we have that opportunity to come. At some point for us, it becomes the, yes, in a perfect world, we would, even with the denial from an ADP, we could come back in a rate case and seek recovery of those costs. And we've appreciated that we have that opportunity to come back. One of the challenges with not getting to an RTF or some other solution that we think is a better structure for the long term is that just puts the resource, the North Dakota piece of that resource, the recovery of that, in question for a longer period of time, such that we don't know where recovery is coming from. And from the investor's standpoint, they then discount us for that. They basically say, well, we don't know if you're ever going to get recovery of that or not. And we're going to assume not, because you didn't get the ADP, so
well, I just
too much of that, you start to get.
I just wanted to have
a
little. I hear what you're saying, but I just also wanted to make sure I made clear what I was thinking. That ADPs are there for a reason. But back to the whole, we've had cases where Company X built something that maybe been a little bit more than something Y should have been, but we came back for recovery. They got what Y was, and I mean, because that's the way we stick with the rate making principles, and that's where the point that Alana just flushed it out. If the intent is to be able to use this for rec somewhere else and sell those, we want to clean that up. I think that would become a – when I looked through, I didn't catch that. So, but I think that's one of the things about what is the value of the RTF if we stick with this and this thing all unfolds. I get your point, though. You want a little more clarity for your investors, and you want to be able to have that discussion. That's what the RTF would give you.
Correct.
That you wouldn't have right now.
Correct.
Got it. So that's a little clearer in my head. And then last two is – if you were to get one more thing, what would you want out of this deal? I asked the opposite of that question before. What's the next thing? What's the thing that you'd like to get if you got one more thing, you being the company?
Well, it's really hard for me to pass up. What I want in the long run is for us to be able to continue to operate and build an integrated system that all of our states recognize and see the value in and are willing to say there's enough of our state policy reflected in this that we're comfortable with the long-term solution. And to the extent we can't get to that that goal, that there's one short of it, which is this RTF structure or this formal arrangement that was entered into creates that long-term certainty so that Minnesota's recognized that they're going to be more aggressive on some policies, and North Dakota's going to be more least cost focused without externalities on some, and we still have found a way to operate an integrated system that's good for the customers in both states and is inviting opportunity across the five-state system that we serve.
Because if I was Beverly or John or Nancy or those people, I would ask that question. And has Betsy's replacement been named and I missed it?
No.
Okay.
Not to my knowledge. No.
Okay. And then, so when you brief this out to the Minnesota Commission, they'll ask you what is the biggest thing for Minnesota customers in this thing? How would you answer that question?
I think the biggest benefit for Minnesota customers is they're having an integrated system that's spread across five states is healthy for our company, is good for our customers. From the pure spreading of costs, there are more customers to spread the cost to. I also think there is benefit that comes from operating across state lines that gives us a different view of the system that is healthy for each of the states that we serve. The fact that we have states that have different views of energy policy, that have different resources in their state, I think is healthy and good for our customers, good for our company, and helps us not become so narrowly focused that we're missing things that we shouldn't miss as a utility. I don't mean to talk in generalities.
No, but that's
I really think that's important.
That's the road you're going down. I don't disagree with it. I just wanted to see if there was something you'd flesh out differently.
No, I'm a big believer that operating an integrated system, serving in states with diverse views, finding solutions.
Maybe we should put that in here a little clearer than somewhere. What you just said, that you fleshed that out, that an opening concept that when you do bring this in front of other jurisdiction, that you can say that while this is part of a North Dakota discussion, we feel, and you can take that as a lead statement when you talk to South Dakota and Wisconsin and Minnesota and flush that out, because that'd be the first question that I would ask for them. And then the last thought is, one of the things, I'm going to keep looking at Mike's testimony because it's easier. He highlighted the six things that he thinks. But, we support the use of the 12CP going forward. Would it really muck up the waters if we added something in there that we support the concept of life after 60 on nuclear generation?
No, I don't think it would. I think it would.
But it'd be a strong statement from the North Dakota Commission that.
Well, let me give you a little context of that answer.
I don't know exactly what you're talking about over there.
I do not think it would be harmful for the North Dakota Commission to say what its view is on nuclear and on life after 60. In fact, I think it can underscore that North Dakota sees clear value in the integrated system. We're the only utility.
We're saying it's not Minnesota. It's what the kind of resources you're putting on the grid. We like your nuclear power. We like your coal power. But we do not like your stuff that you drive out that's not least cost.
And I think the I think the thing I'm trying to focus on is helping through the effort that we have here is that we're showing the benefits of the system and we're showing solutions to the differences. And that's kind of those are some of the overriding principles for this. I do think that if we put a statement in that says that, we should be clear you're not trying to poke the Minnesota Commission in the eye. You're acknowledging that they're going to look at the life after 60 question too. And you are too, and you get to weigh in. And
we support the concept of life after 60 for nuclear power, as well as maintaining all the baseload generation the state can. Something broader like that, without mucking things up too much. I just wanted to, because I think that the selling point for me, if you're sitting down, I know over the years we've got to know the other commissioners pretty well. They're all reasonable people, and they're going to want to be sold on, okay, how is this benefiting the system? How is this benefiting our state? South Dakota, their 5% is going to benefit in Wisconsin, but Minnesota will have to be the big lift. And they can, if they can see some value that we're reasonable, that we support the concept of integrated system, they're more likely to then support the gas plant. And that's how we do the transmission issues. We build out. You get two, we get one, and we all agree, and it's a big fight. But at the end of the day, if we each get a little something, it seems like it works out.
I think the analogy to the transmission system is a good one. I think,
and then we allocate costs accordingly.
I think with the transmission system, with the CapEx 2020 right. effort, there is a recognition that in the short term, one state may come out better than another. Over the long term, we're going to build a grid that provides us a long-term, solid, stable energy future that's good for all. And I think that's really what I'm trying to accomplish here with the negotiated agreement, is to send that message that I think we can do that on the generation and resource planning side, just like we've done on the transmission side.
Okay, and I still think there's something we should look at for statutory if we go down this road, because if somebody did question it, we want to have something. I like your idea of grid security being a new factor, that while it was always physical security, there's a whole new realm out there that could be a basis for some of this. So thank you, Chris, for your time.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
One quick follow-up. Do you envision that whatever is approved in terms of an RTF for us would also have to be approved by the other states?
I think Certainly we would need to take it to Minnesota. I think that we would start informally with South Dakota and Wisconsin and see how they wanted us to proceed and whether they wanted us to bring it forward in their jurisdictions or not. With Wisconsin, Michigan, it gets a little more complicated because we have the FERC interchange agreement mm-hmm. there. So there's another layer of regulatory and legal considerations to think through. But what we typically do is we go and share the information with them and try to get them comfortable on that informal basis or even in a formal docket in front of them. I know we have to go to Minnesota. I see it more as an informal discussion in Wisconsin and South Dakota, unless they want us to formally bring it forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Christman.
If this were approved, regarding your discussion with Commissioner Kalk, if this were approved, isn't our willingness to have our customers pay for the biomass PPAs a pretty strong statement of support for their nuclear plants?
Yes, I would say so.
Okay. And the life expectancy of the nuclear facilities are like 2030 and 2033, correct?
Yes.
Are there any licensing things that come up in the meantime, or storage capacity or anything like that, where the company has traditionally kind of been held hostage in negotiations between now and then?
We have our license extensions to operate through 30 for Monty and 33-34 for Prairie Island 1 and 2. And I think probably what I need to do is maybe by the time we get Kurt on the stand, we can detail out what we think some of the other upcoming licensing requirements would be that could provide those openings that you're concerned about.
Okay.
I don't think there are many, but I don't think it's fair to say there are none.
That would be good if you could lay that out.
Yeah, we can lay that out, or if Kurt doesn't know, we can supplement it, because we may have to go to the nuclear group to get the detailed permitting and licensing plan.
That's very good. Thank you. Other questions?
I'd propose
go ahead.
Provide that information as a late filed exhibit, if that's okay with the commissioners.
Okay. Anything further, Mr. Simpson?
I have nothing, Your Honor.
Okay. How about you, Mr. Hsu? Anything?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Nothing further,
okay.
Thanks.
Commissioners, any?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Clark.
Thank you.
We'll break for about 15 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You always read them when you start asking questions. You're like,
yeah.
It's all right. How's your mom?
birds with the state bank.
Our birds are smart.
Okay.
We're all over New York City.
We're back on the record. Mr. Simpson, you can call your next witness at this time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Xcel Energy calls Mr. Dave Cedarquist to the stand.
Good morning, Mr. Cedarquist. Before you testify, I'm required to give you an oath, and in doing so, I must advise you of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota. It is a Class C felony. It is punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. And being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Cedarquist, your pre-filed direct testimony has been stipulated into the record. I understand you don't have any additional opening statements, and so with that, the witness is available for cross.
Okay. Mr. Hsu?
Just a couple, Your Honor. Mr. Cedarquist, what steps has NSP taken in order to ensure that a thermal generation will be built in North Dakota at this time?
Well, Mr. Hayer can answer those questions more directly, but I am aware that we have filed with MISO and Interconnect filing, so we're making that attempt right now.
Okay, so most of those questions will be better reserved for Mr. Hayer?
Yes.
Okay. I guess I have no other questions then at this time, Your Honor.
Okay. Commissioner Kalk?
Well, I think we need to find our general counsel before we go anywhere else.
Okay. Fair enough.
Somebody's got to keep an eye on me, just like Zeb keeps an eye on Chris, so it's only fair. While we're rounding her up, though, I'll just ask a couple of basic ones, Dave, if that's all right. You were more involved in the negotiation directly, the way I understand it. So what was the next thing you were trying to get into this negotiated agreement, if you will?
Well, Commissioner, I will say that my expectations for where we would end up with this filing were probably too large, too big. We had fully expected to have filed that long-term view of how things would be handled, that framework. And so I guess, you know, my wish for this one would have been to have all of that included in here, and including the future approach to how we were going to deal with resources. So
your preference would be to not have the one-year period to do the RTF, would be to have it taken care of now?
Well, I mean, that was
that's
we wanted to be, but we may have bit off more than we could chew. I would have absolutely no problem making some adjustments to the time frame if that's the commission's desire. It's a very difficult project. It's really a tough nut to crack, so providing a little more time might actually be helpful.
And I know that we just heard from Chris, and you certainly support his positions, I'm sure, so I don't expect any. I'm not trying to play gotcha here. But as this RTF framework develops, what's the approach you're going to take? I mean, so you and Mike are sitting in a room. Where do you start at?
That's a really perceptive question. Well, I think we'll start internally again. We'll pull the necessary folks within our company together to kick off a more in-depth discussion of the options that we might want to go. Of course, that would be our initial approach. We'd definitely want to involve the staff early on as well.
I'm just trying to think, Dave, of, okay, the way I understand it now is if you got something above a certain amount of megawatts, you're going to come for an ADP. We'll either accept or, I don't say reject, we'll either approve or disapprove or not approve it. And then the company makes a decision. We come back in a rate case. Don't we already have that framework?
Yes. Resource treatment framework isn't probably going to affect, certainly in the short run, that kind of process. That's what is in place today. That's what you can continue to do. The issue is that that's not a sustainable process for the company. For the reasons that
why is it not sustainable? The time lag you're facing, or the uncertainty in jurisdictions, or
yeah, I mean, as Mr. Clark indicated, there are a couple of reasons for that. One, we would have an extremely difficult time getting full cost recovery for our investments. any time you have a situation where any one of our integrated states decides not to participate in a resource, we're immediately behind the eight ball on cost recovery. The other issue is it can sort of spawn a process.
And that has changed because the ability of generation resources has greatly increased in the last 10 years and differing state policies to what Chris talked about.
Yeah, I mean that, planning, and Mr. Hayer can talk about this in depth, but planning has become a lot more complicated for a lot of reasons. Policy aside, there are even technological reasons, different alternatives for energy resources. The fact that our own fleet has aged to a point where we're seeing retirements now occur more than ever. All of those things make the process much different than it was 10, 20 years ago.
So your thought is that if you'd like to see a framework that would advance the ability of making decisions with the tied up with the cost recovery so you can have the appropriate investments in the appropriate time? You think the RTF benefits that?
I think when I think of an RTF, a successful RTF, it's what it really kind of boils down to is it's an understanding. It's an understanding among all of our state regulators of how things will work. It's not necessarily a very specific prescription of what will be filed when necessarily, but it's a framework.
I'm still trying to catch something though, Dave. If we're not going to abandon you build something, you come in for an ADP, at some point in time you file a rate case, you come back for it. I'm missing what this is.
Yeah, well, and we don't have all the answers today either, Commissioner, on how this will eventually evolve, and maybe the present ADP.
Would it be something
process
like wind resources will be allocated like this among jurisdictions, where baseload resources will be allocated like this, and then we would buy off on that? Is that?
I'm not going to say no. That isn't the way it wouldn't. I mean, all options are out there. This is part of the struggle we had early on in trying to figure this all out. Is how will this lay out?
Could we do like we did for the for transmission, we defined these are MVP projects. We laid out a framework of if a project falls in that type of mode, the cost would be allocated to different zones or across the way. Are you thinking something like generation would be the same thing? If it's a state-mandated generation, then it would go to the state that mandated. If it's something that everybody benefits, I'm trying to flesh out what you're thinking. Otherwise, giving you more time doesn't do any good.
Well, the answer is yes to all of the above. We have thought of many different possible concepts for how this would work. You've mentioned a few of them right here, but the fact of the matter is there are obstacles and huge challenges in implementing any of them. That's not to say we've given up on any of them. They may still. We just simply ran out of time as to when we could file a plan, and that's why we're here today with a negotiated agreement that sort of clears the deck in a way. It says, hey, for all the stuff that's currently existing, let's reach agreement on that. Let's reach agreement on the resource commitment that we're making. Let's get some of these things off the deck so that we can focus on how the future is going to operate. So I'm sorry, Commissioner, I don't have any answers.
No, this is
here.
Worthwhile, though, because I think that some of it is the having commissioner involvement. If we do the RTF earlier in the RTF, might be better than later, because otherwise you come up with something and we may not even like it, and then you wasted all that time. Tell me this. This is my last line, I think, is that Alana brought up the point about the whole used and useful. And do you know how we get around that, if you will, if lack of better terms, for transmission cost allocation?
No, Commissioner, I can't really comment on that. I don't have that expertise.
Because I'm trying to think of if we could somehow demonstrate that a electron generated with a solar in Minneapolis is no way going to benefit North Dakota, then it's very hard to distinguish where the electrons come from and go for. I mean, Minnesota sued North Dakota on coal. We didn't want that. Well, it's almost ironic that we're saying we won't take your solar generation. That's why I always felt that in a rate case we wouldn't be able to say no.
I think Mr. Hager could answer that question better.
All right. I think that's it, Dave. Thank you for your work in Fargo and Grand Forks and Minot. To all you're up here, I know you've worked very hard over the last, long before I got here, but appreciate your effort over there.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thanks.
Before we move on to Commissioner Ferocek, I'll give Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco the opportunity to conduct her initial examination. Do you have any questions?
One question, and I apologize, and I just thought Jack was going to take, like, longer. I was getting a cup of coffee. Anyway, one question that Jerry had, which is you mentioned that you had filed with MISO for an interconnection agreement for the plant, and we'd like to know with whom you would be interconnecting.
Yeah, that's a question that Mr. Hager will.
Oh, all right. Then didn't miss anything. Thanks.
Commissioner Ferocek. Okay.
Thank you, Dave. A couple follow-ups to Commissioner Kalk. And to Lana's question earlier of Mr. Clark, and that is, I guess I'll start with that one. She threw out, and I think it has a lot of promise myself. I can see the challenges, but just from being a thoughtful, flexible, long-term approach that would allow you guys to integrate input from all your jurisdictions, the IRP process, and making that more formal in North Dakota seems like one that should be added to your list of considerations. Do you have any additional thoughts on the strengths and weaknesses of that and why that may or may not be something that could work?
Sure. Commissioner, I think some of the strengths with that, I don't oppose that in any fashion. That would probably serve to illuminate a lot of issues perhaps sooner. I think that some of the differences and some of the issues around things like what forecasts are going to be used would obviously be discussion points that could be had around the resource plan. Because let's face it, the resource plan kind of takes sort of center stage in this whole issue about resources, obviously. So I think there is a place for it. I think as Mr. Clark was pointing out, though, while it may illuminate certain differences, I don't know that it necessarily gets to the issue that we're trying to resolve with the resource treatment framework, and that's how do we meet the needs and the energy preferences of each state that we're serving. While a more formal process with the IRP might provide more information and input, it doesn't really get to what we're trying to accomplish here.
It seems like it gets to exactly what we're trying to accomplish here, because you're talking about how do we meet the needs. Here are the various requirements that we have to operate under, and here's how we propose to meet them. Now tell us why this doesn't work, and then there's a good conversation back and forth about what we like and don't like, and in the end, we probably have to plug our nose on some things we don't like, and so does Minnesota, and the company gets clarity long-term for and the assurance that the commission has seen it and agrees with this approach. There isn't any of this repricing of resources and all of that, which seems really complicated and difficult long-term to sustain, if you ask me. But
if you're talking about a resource planning process that's more collaborative with other commissions, I would tend to agree that there some of these issues could be dealt with in that kind of a proceeding. But I guess what I was seeing is that, for example, if there was a discussion about the resource plan that we had filed, the commission here, this commission may have said, well, we're probably not going to support this solar project given the pricing of that project. So we've made that clear now during the resource planning process, perhaps well before the actual filing of an ADP, but I'm not so sure then that we've resolved that issue. Now we know that this is going to be an issue, but how have we resolved it?
Right.
So that's what we hope to do with the resource treatment framework. We want to keep the company whole from a financial standpoint. We want to address state preferences in the best way we can and keep the system integrated.
Okay. So you've outlined in your testimony these four general on page 7 and 8, and then you go into them in more detail. You told Commissioner Kalk and in your testimony that none of those are really off the table. But can you provide a little bit more insight in as to which of those you think holds the most promise for being, you know, something that's doesn't have so many downsides that it just it doesn't seem like very realistic?
Well, I think ideally a process that's more front-end oriented and that involves all of our states in some kind of dialogue and collaborative process before any investments are made would probably be best.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, it's number two, uneconomic resources are repriced in those states relying on least cost selection criteria. Mm-hmm. So you'd come up with a proxy price.
That's not too far unlike what part of this negotiated agreement has with our seabed projects.
Mm-hmm.
That's the proxy pricing. You know, unfortunately, that puts the company at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look down the road, is that the kind of a policy that you want to have in place for every potential resource that comes down the road? Besides putting the company at risk, there would very likely be a very convoluted regulatory process of going back every time one commission rejected a resource, having to go back to one or more other state commissions to work mm-hmm. out the recovery aspect. So that's the downside of that approach.
Right. So that's pretty risky for the company and probably likely that you're never whole.
Likely.
So, but the first one, I'm trying to kind of X some of these off the list as just they just don't seem realistic long term. The first one, where everybody accepts that if they're driving the development of certain resources, they're paying for them. That's not going to fly, is it?
I'm generally fairly optimistic. I mean, I'm not going to say no. It wouldn't fly. We haven't finished putting together a proposal in that regard because of some of the difficulties. But I guess as I sit here, I don't want to preclude any of the discussion or frameworks we've had in the past, while hoping that we can still arrive at one that's more effective than what we have been discussing.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you.
I don't know. I look at all these, and I almost think that you're looking at number four.
Well, as Mr.
Restructuring XL, you know, and basically creating XL Energy North Dakota or NSP North Dakota.
I mean, that might appear to be the cleanest way to ensure that energy preferences are met in each state. Certainly, as Mr. Clark has alluded to, very expensive. There are a lot of contracts and affiliated agreements. There's transmission arrangements that would all need be impacted by that. It's a very final kind of decision. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of going back if that were not to work. And of course, the big issue there is that, and a big concern of ours is that the North Dakota customers and the North Dakota system loses the benefits of being mm-hmm. part of an integrated system.
Right. Yeah, that is a big concern. What happens if you come up with a frame? What does the agreement say happens if you come up with a framework that we reject?
Well, I think Mr. Diller directly answered that in his testimony. We have met our obligation in the provisions of the comprehensive settlement to file a negotiated agreement. If the commission were to reject that, then presumably we would be back to the status quo, recovering all of those PPAs that are right now listed to be excluded.
Mm-hmm. Are you experiencing or seeing other states in other parts of the country, even with other utilities, in this type of a bind? Have you heard about this? Are we just kind of forging the ground here on our own, or are other states working through the same type of thing?
I'm aware that there are other states with similar issues, and I would probably ask you to direct that question to Mr. Hager. I think he's had more experience with that. But, yeah, we know that other states have worked out different arrangements because of state policy differences.
Mm-hmm. And those have already helped to direct some of your
Looked at them, but they're not – I mean, they were also very complex arrangements, too, in some cases. I believe there was one out west that Mike and I have been discussing for years. And so those have been sort of considerations, but at this point none of them have really been the answer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, I think I've covered most of my questions. Thanks, Dave.
Commissioner Christman?
Dave, if you were to get a thermal facility built by the end of 2025, and working your thought process backwards with construction and property acquisition and siting approval and those types of things, what would be the first official filings you would do? Would it be for siting, and how far ahead of time would you need to start that process to make sure that you left yourself plenty of time to meet your deadline?
Yeah. Commissioner, I'm going to ask you to refer to Mr. Hager for that process. I'm most familiar with North Dakota regulatory filings, but he has a better feel for other approvals that need to be done.
So just summarize for me the penalty provisions if that obligation is not met, and if this is approved and right. The way the plan is.
If the plant is not in operation by the end of 2025, the company will refund half of the what I'll call premium costs of the biomass PPAs that were collected from 2016 through 2025. The premium costs are those, is the difference between the actual costs of the biomass projects and what customers would have paid had those projects or those PPAs not been implemented.
Okay, and in your written testimony, it said the premium costs on the seabeds and the small PPAs was $1.6 million, but I didn't ever really find the value to put on the biomass projects that would be comparable.
Yes, and those costs were in excess of $5 million per year, and Mr. Hager covers that in his testimony and has an attachment in his testimony showing the year-by-year impact of the biomass projects.
And if the Minnesota Commission would obstruct construction of that facility, you would still be subject to the penalty, correct?
That's correct.
And what if some other North Dakota agency obstructs that plant addition? What if we have a SIP that says we can't build any more fossil fuel facilities until we meet some certain goal and we haven't met it yet? Would that still subject you to the penalty?
The way the negotiated agreement is written, the answer is yes.
So no matter what, if it's not built,
yes,
it goes through. Okay. My other questions are for Mr. Hager. Then thank you, Dave.
Mr. Simpson?
Just a couple of quick redirect, Your Honor. Going back to what Commissioner Fedorchak talked about, her view of if we could come up with a framework that some states will hold their nose, some states will say yes, and everybody, we can find a way that everybody compromises to move forward. You know, Commissioner Fedorchuk asked that question within the context of wouldn't a resource plan be the answer? But in a lot of ways, wouldn't the company's ability to find a way to get to that outcome really be a successful RTF, in your opinion?
Yes.
I have nothing further.
Okay. Mr. Hsu?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Go ahead, Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Did you want to go first?
Ladies first.
Then in follow-up to Mr. Simpson's question, Dave, what the framework, though, what it concerns me about what I'm seeing as a framework is how does it evolve over time and provide the, you know, ability, ongoing ability, because once you set it up, it has to, you have to be able to change it. So how does that work?
Well, I don't have a specific answer, Commissioner, but again, it goes back to my view that what we're talking about is a framework that has within it enough flexibility to address some of the unknowns. Because, I mean, I think we've even seen it in recent years. It seems like every resource filing sort of has a different twist to it. And there will be even more in the future as we look at, you know, the possibility of retiring Sherco early. That's something that we've not really dealt with before with this commission. So there's a lot of things that need to be accommodated within an RTF. We need to figure out how and what kind of framework we can all agree to and operate within. And there will be compromise, I'm sure, even just within the general concept of the framework itself. But I guess I don't have a more specific answer for you right now. That's really the challenge.
Commissioner Kolk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Dave, just a speculation question like always out of me, right? I think the way the Clean Power Plan shakes out will determine the role of this commission for a long time to come. I mean, if the Clean Power Plan holds, then there won't be much role for the North Dakota Commission in some of these decisions. But in the meantime, would you be against a 2-year time frame instead of one, with every 6 months Xcel coming in and giving us an update? Well, not Xcel, Xcel and staff come in and give us an update as to where your discussion is going, to what issues are on the table, just like we did way back when you and I and Mark worked through that whole meter billing stuff. Is that something that you think would be reasonable?
Yes, I think that we would be
invaluable,
very,
maybe
very open to that. We were trying to be sensitive to the passage of time in setting our goals to file a plan by January 1, 2017, but we're not going to argue against having a little more time to put that together, along with the updates that you've required or that you're requesting. That seems to me that would be...
Well, I think it'd just be fair that I mean, who knows if all three of us are still sitting here in 2 years, hopefully so. But I think it'd be the continuity that there would be no real surprises when the settlement, when it finally gets to us, to one of the questions that my colleague said about what if we reject it, along the way you're hearing it so you'd know what we'd be thinking and you'd be bringing up your concerns. Because when we got to the end of that bill thing, I thought we had a pretty good project. So
I think one of the advantages of the negotiated agreement is that, as I mentioned before, it helps to clear the decks of some of the things. If we're being distracted by rate filings or continued angst over some existing PPAs, that's only going to make the project harder. So part of the advantage here with the negotiated agreement is we put some of those things to bed,
right,
and able to focus a little more directly. The other thing is the last year hasn't gone to waste. We've spent a lot of time getting our arms around this issue and this challenge, and we feel we're in a little better position now to move forward.
Well, and I'm just wondering too about as policy plays out around us and decisions, how we got to where we're at with transmission planning was, you know, MISO was RTOs were created, and each state put together a rep. I wonder how we would ever – do you have any thoughts about how we would ever have some type of collaboration between North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, let's say, where commissioners get together on generation planning like we do for transmission planning? Have you ever thought about that?
We have, and without a doubt that would be helpful in this whole process, if not absolutely essential. So definitely that might be part of a framework. It might involve a lot more interaction, a lot more collaboration.
I think it almost has to. If you don't involve your other states early in this kind of a project, it ain't going to hold. And you still have the same with transmission. One commissioner goes, but you still have to come back to talk to your colleagues. And if they don't like it, then it doesn't go. But you have that discussion. And this, you know, maybe the whole Clean Power Plan gets a stay and it gets thrown out. Then I think we go back to business as usual. But I think we need to buy ourselves some time here. So you think 6 months would be reasonable?
Sure. Yeah, I think that would be reasonable.
And you guys could help shop this around to other commissions and see what their thoughts might be, and maybe that'd be the basis of the first update. So, okay. Thanks, Dan.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Now I need to ask a question of my colleague. Shop what around?
Oh, just I think in their discussion with other commissions about what their thoughts are on a RTF.
Okay.
Discussion and just a concept, because you know, obviously we see all of our colleagues, and I think we're all wrestling with the same issue, and mm-hmm. It's going to functionally change the way we do business potentially, and how the Clean Power Plan lays out, and this may be on our lap whether we want it or not, and we may be, as you point out, maybe well ahead of the game because we're having this discussion now.
Right.
Commissioner Christman?
No other questions.
Ms. Jeff Kotsako, I think I missed you the first time around. Any questions?
I had one, but it got answered in this last go-around, okay. So thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Simpson?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Hsu, did you have anything? Okay.
Yes,
all right. Thank you, Mr. Cedarquist.
If I may, I just would like to say that as difficult as this project has been, the staff has been a real pleasure to work with, very accommodating and patient, and it's been our privilege to work with them. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Simpson, I think we can get started with your next witness.
Well, yeah, I think we'll be done by lunch.
You just teased it.
Xcel Energy calls Kurt Hager to the stand.
Mr. Hager, before you testify, I'm required to give you an oath, and in doing so, I must advise you of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota. It is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both, and being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Hager, your pre-filed testimony has been already stipulated into the record. I understand you have no opening comments, so with that, the witness is available for cross.
Okay, Mr. Hsu.
Mr. Hager, do you have your testimony in front of you, by chance?
I do not.
Yep. Oh. I have you turn to Schedule 1, attach your testimony.
I have it in front of me.
Thank you. On Tip 1 of Schedule 1, what does that represent?
It is a listing of the biomass contracts and the incremental cost of those biomass contracts on an annual basis, calculating the difference between the actual cost of the biomass and an adjusted ECA cost or FCA cost with those excluded.
With the inclusion of these biomass facilities in the negotiated agreement, if approved, what type of costs are forecasted to be? Would we expect North Dakota ratepayers have to pay?
If this is approved,
yes,
they would pay the actual cost of the biomass agreements.
And it's forecasted to be a total cost throughout that time of $50 million, $874,000. Is that correct?
That would be the incremental cost. It's not the total cost of the biomass, because this is
right.
A delta or an incremental look.
Right, the incremental cost on top.
Correct.
Have you turned your attention? Can I turn your attention to page 10 of your testimony?
I'm here.
Now, the two wind projects listed on Table 2, these will be included within the negotiated agreement, correct?
Correct.
And the present value revenue requirement savings that North Dakota customers are expected to receive throughout the life of these projects are $88 million for the Pleasant Valley and $51 million for Odell. Is that correct?
That would be the total savings to the entire system, so therefore North Dakota would be 5% of that.
Okay. Thank you. And just for clarification, on Table 5, the listed on Table 2 on the same page, that's it. There was no change from the 30-year operating life and the 20-year operating life for the Odell project, and that's due to it being a PPA, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And what steps has NSP taken in order to ensure that North Dakota thermal generation will be built to this point?
So what we've done so far, we're still investigating multiple sites, but specifically around the Fargo location, the general design is that we would go into the Bison sub, which is a sub that connects to our transmission system. And so for that location, we have actually filed for an interconnection agreement with MISO so that we hold that position. We've begun looking at land potential acquisitions or options around that location. Two of the things we want to control is land and access. And so we've taken those steps to go ahead and look at a specific location. We've started the initial design of what a gas pipeline into that location would look like and what the cost of that initial gas pipeline would be. And then in general, we're out in the market right now for combustion turbines. We've got two projects, one in Texas and the Black Dog project. So we've been in touch with vendors about potential costs and things like that.
Okay. I think that's all the questions I have.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Well, the first question would be with interconnect with whom? And then the second question that Jerry would like answered is pipeline from where?
Okay. My understanding is that the interconnection request is at the Bison sub with NSP transmission.
Okay.
So it would be directly with our own system. The gas pipeline, right now, the what I'll call the number one design would be coming off of the Viking pipeline that currently serves the Fargo area and bringing that pipeline into the combustion turbine site. We're also looking at other sites because, again, we're trying to find what we think is the most economical. So we're still evaluating other alternatives.
The Viking line or the WBI line?
The Viking line.
Okay.
WBI, which is another Williston Basin Interstate, is another pipeline in the area. Using that pipeline to get gas would require potentially more investment to bring more gas supply into the Fargo area, which was very contingent upon other activities, other customers possibly in that area. That still is a possibility. But the issue is right now probably the lower cost alternative that we see is potentially off of Viking.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
Commissioner Kolk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Kurt. We meet again. You ready?
Ready to ride.
All right, here we go. First question I have, can Xcel guarantee the power to the dome will be on this weekend at 7 p.m. from the Bison Play Richmond? Pardon?
Well, certainly.
All right, good enough. That's certainly weighed heavily on my decision factor today. Just a couple questions, Kurt. Thank you for your work, as always, and your prepared testimony. The rate moratorium that we're going to potentially extend one more year, why couldn't we do her two? If we're going to give you 2 years to put together the RTF, why not 2 years for the rates?
That's a great question for Mr. Clark. No.
If it's a management decision where, you know, the 5% of our cost, I think that, to me, that's seriously, I think that's what it comes down to. Can you carry that cost for an additional year?
Yeah, and I think as Mr. Clark suggested, I think he would have to look at a number of issues as far as what's going on with the total system. I mean, certainly there are some CapEx lines that are coming into service around that time and some other things.
Different collection of fees. Those are transmission matters that wouldn't affect this rate case.
And again, I'm not the expert on
just threw it out there, though, because that's right. CapEx fees or should be outside of this.
So in my mind, I think Chris would, as he indicated, okay. He would have to look at the totality of what's going on and the total cost of service and come back and answer that question.
I didn't press him hard enough because I thought you were going to give me a more refined answer. So, but what analysis was completed when you agreed to the one-year moratorium? I assumed you guys penciled it out and said, okay, we can deal with that, or was that all right, fine. We'll give us 12 CP if they give us the year. Okay, fine.
I actually was not involved in the discussion about the one-year rate moratorium. So, again, I'd probably ask you to
Well, we'll need to get Mr. Clark back up here then to flush that out.
Sure.
So you talked about the energy park a little bit, about those steps. To me, there's really nowhere else than where you laid out that this thing would work. Correct? The Bison substation tying into your line, there's nowhere else that really would work in the state, is there?
There are a couple locations that we're looking at. So the Bison was originally the favorite, but we're also looking at other alternatives, potentially a little further south. And so where we'd come possibly off of a northern border pipeline.
Build the transmission the other way. I see your point. Okay.
Correct. And so we don't want to lock ourselves in because we want to make sure that we get the best project.
And that'd be an economic decision based on that time.
Correct. Okay.
And the last question I have, I guess, Kurt, is that in this settlement agreement, dropped from 400 megawatts of thermal to 200 megawatts of thermal. Is that a hard number, 200 megawatts, or is it about that 200 megawatts that you're agreeing to in this settlement agreement?
It's about, because the CT, again, depending if you take a nameplate rating of winter versus summer, it's
exactly where I was
235 to 208, you know.
So should we clarify that a little bit? I don't want to box you into a 200 megawatts if the sizing of it turns out better to be 180 or if it turns out better to be 2.25.
Well, and I think what we've said is that we'll put in at least a 200 megawatt facility because we want to leave ourselves open to pick the vendor. We haven't picked Siemens or GE. And so we haven't picked the actual turbine yet, so that'll determine the size. I think we were comfortable with at least 200 in this case, or approximately 200, because both of the combustion turbines that we'd probably be looking at would be slightly bigger than that.
Bigger than the 100?
No, bigger than the 200.
I thought these things were plug and play, like 45 megawatts and then 88 megawatts. You can buy a 200 megawatt one of these, or 212?
Yes. There's different technologies. The LM6000s, which are essentially just a jet engine, those come in size ranges of about 40 megawatts. LMS100s, next step up, come in sizes of about 80 to 100 megawatts. Then you get into frame machines, the F machine, the H machine, which are the large combustion turbines, and they're typically 200 or larger.
Right.
Older machines were around 175 to 180, but the newer machines tend to be a little bit bigger. So,
okay. Thank you, Kurt. That's all the questions I have.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Thanks, Kurt. I'll focus on this turbine, that the thermal generation as well. Have you had any so you're looking at a peaker at a just a combustion turbine, not a combined cycle unit?
Correct, right now, yes.
Have you had any discussions or do you see any scenarios where that would change and you'd be looking at more of a combined cycle unit, perhaps in partnership with Otter Tail or MDU or one of the other companies that's operating in this area?
That is a potential. To be honest with you, I think to get to the point of a combined cycle, it would be later in the decade when our resource need is a little bit more along the lines of more combined cycle being added. I think the way I look at the resource plan, to get a unit in earlier would be a combustion turbine, and to the extent that then that project would evolve possibly to a combined cycle by building out the unit, that's still a possibility.
Is that a common way of doing that? Is that an efficient way of doing it? You put in a combustion turbine, then it evolves when the need requires it to a combined cycle?
It can be if you design it up front and have an idea of that's where you wanted to head ultimately with the project. It can be an efficient way to do it. Certainly the problems they have is when they design the combustion turbine with no idea of it ever being a combined cycle, and that would be a problem. And so
how are you planning this one? Are you doing it that way?
We're starting off with a CT design because mm-hmm. we don't know if we have any potential partners yet, and we don't know if we have a need that's larger than a combustion turbine. But we're keeping in mind, like when we're sizing gas pipelines, we're looking at potential transmission studies. We're looking to the extent of could we put something larger in, and whether that would be additional CTs at the energy park or a build-out to a combined cycle. We're taking both of those into account. Mm-hmm. But again, what we're originally focused, what we filed in the resource plan, would start with a CT.
Okay. But so I heard you correctly, you're definitely keeping open the possibility of a larger combined cycle unit down the road. So you wouldn't do something that would forbid that from happening with this facility?
Ultimately, when we come to the final design and engineering of the unit, I think we would take a look to see how have we progressed down one path or another. And that's we would start making those decisions. You figure back up about 4 years, 4 to 5 years from when the actual unit would go in service, and that's when you start making those hard decisions. Right.
Can you characterize any of the conversations you're having with other utilities about their needs and how you might work together on something like larger?
We've certainly had discussions. We're in the process right now of putting non-disclosure agreements in place so that we might be able to have more meaningful discussions with those utilities. And then as we go forward, you know, we'll just have to see how those discussions play out over time.
And I'm a little concerned with this date, the 2025 date. I mean, it's great, but when companies plan to meet a deadline that might prevent them from doing better planning to meet a later deadline, it concerns me that we would create that kind of an environment that might prevent you from looking at a more, you know, a larger, more deliberate facility that would serve the system well long term. Just like, well, we got to get this. We said we'd do it by 2025, so we have to get the CT in there. Can you assure me that that wouldn't happen?
Well, I think, you know, based upon the discussions we've had so far and based upon the evolution of the resource plan concept, we'll be in those discussions. We'll see how the Clean Power Plan starts to unfold. We'll bring these things into our planning to make sure that when we make the final decision on go, no go, CT 23 or 25 or a combined cycle or whatever, we'll take all of that information into account. And actually, I believe that's part of what ultimately will come through the RTF process and the input process, that you will get updates exactly what steps we're taking, what decisions we have to cross or make, and where we're headed at the time with the best information. Because as Commissioner Kalk said, there are a number of things that are changing out here, and we're not just going to go down a path just to go down the path. I think we'll head down a path to see if it makes sense. We certainly have started to lay out our expectations for how we would go, but we'll take into account that information as we go forward. I think we'll have a much better view of the 23 or 25 project by the time we get to about 2019. Mm-hmm. And so we have some time to actually continue to develop this process.
What were you looking at prior to this proposed settlement agreement? What were you looking at for addressing the capacity need in this same time frame? Was this always on the table, or?
Yeah, we typically have demonstrated that a combustion turbine is economic in this time frame.
And in North Dakota?
When we do our planning, we're pretty generic to where it is. And what we've done is moved from a generic view to a more specific view.
Okay. And how are you preparing for, in your planning, the criticism from Minnesota that you didn't explore enough other options because you were driven by this commitment to North Dakota?
We've actually had quite a bit of experience with other options in Minnesota. We had the CAFCON process that had combustion turbines from different vendors in our own projects. We've looked at different sites in Minnesota and Wisconsin, and now we're adding additional work on the sites that we looked at originally in North Dakota. So I think that we're going to be able to put a package on the table to say why we think this project makes sense, and we're driving to make it economical. Mm-hmm. So we have in mind these other issues as far as what are the alternatives that they would compare it to.
So you're comfortable that you're going to have the case, a strong case for the Minnesota Commission for why this makes sense for the system, for their ratepayers, and for the company.
Yes, that's exactly where we're headed right now.
Is there capacity on that Viking line to serve another project like this?
There is summer capacity available on that Viking line. Typically, a combustion turbine might have oil backup, and that might be the design we put in just in case it's not available in the peak winter day. It's a typical design across the country to be able to run it. Again, the peaker is typically called upon in the summer, which there is available capacity. But we'll look at designs to make it potentially available in the winter also.
Okay.
It's one of the ways that we make the project more economic is not having a firm upstream transport in the winter when it's very expensive, and using a backup fuel system to allow us to still run, but run primarily off natural gas when necessary.
Mm-hmm. And what happened to the Hankinson location?
You know, the Hankinson location is still a potential. We obviously have the Alliance gas quality issue at Hankinson. It's a wetter pipeline. Mm-hmm. Alliant isn't overly friendly to taps on that line because they sell the liquids in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so they don't like taking off gas streams ahead and then having to process. It's still an option. I've talked to the gas processing folks about putting a separator type system upstream to make sure that the liquids would not be a problem for the combustion turbine. We deal with these same type of issues in the Denver-Julesburg Basin in Colorado, mm-hmm. which is a wet system. So we're still looking at it, but right now it's probably not in the top two candidate list. It's probably a third candidate.
So basically it's more expensive, quite a bit more expensive when you have to take that wet gas off, process it, put it back
in. And more cumbersome for operations.
Okay. All right. Would there be potential other partners to share in that, though, if you were to do that? There's some industrial customers in that area that are looking for gas to use for their natural gas to use for their own operations that could help make that more economic.
We're looking at the possibilities both at a south a southern site that might have some of that flexibility, also off of Alliant. Mm-hmm. Again, Alliant's just a little bit more difficult because of the fuel mm-hmm. supply situation.
You know, they're pretty hungry for natural gas in that whole southeast area. And so I encourage the company to continue those discussions with both the communities and the large industrial clients who might be able to partner with mm-hmm. you to make that kind of a project more feasible. I'm sure that there's similar folks in the Fargo area that might want more natural gas as well from a Viking line. So there's just a lot of interest in some of these communities that aren't served to get it.
Yeah, and we certainly understand that. One of the things that we have to make sure is if we go ahead and put in distribution systems to what I call non-like power generators, mm-hmm. people that maybe don't have the the wherewithal to understand all of the gas quality issues, we have to be a little bit more careful. I used to run the gas lab at our company years ago. Used to do all the gas quality testing, know a lot about gas quality, a lot about what does it mean to put in into a system where you have to where you have cooling of the gas, therefore liquids drop out, and then do liquids get into the person's location? You know, so one of the things that you have to do is when you take pressure cuts, you have to put something that warms the gas back up to revaporize the liquid so that when it hits the turbine blades, it doesn't damage the turbine blades, things like that. So we just have to be cautious when we're dealing with a wet gas system. Mm-hmm. We certainly have experience with it. We're taking it into account. When we look at it, we're also looking at other alternatives to see could we come from a different source and still possibly make some of that happen.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any discussions about a new pipe altogether? New gas pipe from west to east and contributing to that type of a project?
Yeah, there has been discussions about either a major reinforcement of somebody's existing facilities or a new pipeline. It's very expensive the further the distance you go. Mm-hmm. Pipelines today are, you know, $1 million a mile or more. So when you think about it, every 100 miles, you could be talking about upwards of potentially $200 million, depending upon the size. And so close proximity tends to be better mm-hmm. if you want to be competitive. If you had a major business that you could get what I call drive-by business, in other words, somebody else is paying for the pipeline and I'm just accessing it when I want to access it, then it's more economical. But it is very difficult to subscribe unless you have producer support or something like that they want to get to a different market.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think that concludes my questions so far. Thanks, Kurt.
Commissioner Christman?
You can pass on this question if you like, but would the long pipeline be seem better if we labeled it as a kind of a community-based economic development project?
That would be an interesting discussion when you look at the overall cost for the other customers. So,
you must have been listening because you've pretty well answered all of the questions that I had that were passed off to you, except for one, and that is when you make these decisions about do you come up with a turbine that is designed to be transitioned to a combined cycle, when you're making a decision on a pipeline, on a location and that, when do you need to do, I presume siting would be your first filing before ADP, but when do you need to get those decisions made and official filings made in order to achieve operation by the end of 2025?
So a typical project, you would be in that, again, 4 to 5 year window before you're expected in service, before you're getting a lot of these things done. From, again, land perspective and from transmission, which are probably the longest lead items, and we're in the least control of them because you have a landowner and you have a transmission network that other people could be applying to take space on. Those are the things that we wanted to get out in front of the first. And we've already headed that direction, obviously, with the interconnection request. Land siting and some of the other things that will follow can tend to be a little bit later. We'll obviously do research to see, like, air monitoring. Is there going to be an air issue? Are there other issues that we have to meet, wetlands and all the different things that we have to? We'll do an initial survey to see if there's any critical items, and then we'll figure out that path. Every project's a little bit different because of critical path items. But in general, 4 to 5 years before the in-service is when all of that becomes important.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you, Kurt.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I should have asked you a little bit about the resource planning process as well. You deal with this. Are you the one who's charged with developing the resource plan? You are, right?
I am.
Integrated resource plan. So tell me, help me understand the difference between basically an integrated resource plan and this RTF.
I listened to both Dave and Chris describe the situation, and I'll give you my take on it. The RTF, to me, is a broader framework, and the Integrated Resource Plan is one component of that broader framework. There's different aspects of resource planning. One is what we typically call phase one, which is really what are the assumptions that we're, or what is the process that we're going to do to come to a decision about what resources? And that would include assumptions on load, gas prices, technology prices, things like that, right? We tend to, because unless people have some sense of what does that mean, there are different places when they're discussing the potential of what is a resource plan. The second piece is the acquisition of the actual resource or a process to go forward and implement the resource plan. In my mind, that first piece, which is the modeling and the assumptions and whatever, is a key part of the RTF concept. It's getting input from North Dakota. It's getting input from Minnesota, South Dakota. It's getting input from the market, technology, things like that. And you're bringing it all together in a framework that allows people to make decisions. So in my mind, it's the gathering of information. It is then the analysis and somewhat the negotiation process of how is that going to work between different ideas. And then ultimately, the third part of the RTF would be the implementation and the cost allocation. And so I think when we're looking at this RTF concept, it is all of that. And it kind of follows the concept, but it has more rigor because this analysis and negotiation phase is going to be probably across all of the states.
So that, under what you just described, this process would repeat itself on some scheduled basis. It wouldn't just be one and done, like here's the RTF and we're finished.
Correct. It's a framework that'll live on. It'll be a process that we'll continue to discuss. One part of the RTF may be looking at how do you allocate the existing resources? Is it pro rata? Is it something different? I think those are the things that we'll have to work with staff and the other stakeholders to see exactly how do we move through this. So I envision this to be, again, an ongoing framework that once you set it up, we would continue to use the process as we go through and make resource decisions throughout time. Mm-hmm. And that's why when you look at the different levels of the RTF, it kind of goes from the more simplistic of can we all agree and does it make sense and do we move forward to the more legalistic, which is the separation of companies and using FERC to do interchanges and things like that. So it's kind of a scale of simplistic to more specific and direct. But it's all within the framework of exactly how would we do resource planning and cost allocation and building the portfolio over time.
When in the past, if a commission rejected rate recovery on some projects or didn't provide the ADP or whatever, how did the company handle it?
You know, that was a question that kind of came up. What's different now than it was in the past? I don't remember that we really had many issues in the past because, one, the system was relatively stable. We had some retirements, but they weren't significant. If you look at it, probably the closest would be on this system, High Bridge and Riverside, and the retirement of those facilities and replacing with natural gas. But we were really looking at, for a long period of time, was it a combustion turbine? What size a combustion turbine? Or was it a combined cycle? And that's kind of the limit of what was discussed. Mm-hmm. 2004, 2008 started to get more complex because wind started to come into this. Now we look at it. We have small solar, rooftop solar, community solar, utility scale solar, wind at different locations. The wind industry has become much more sophisticated. I mean, they're hitting over 50% capacity factors in certain areas now. Storage, energy storage is now on the forefront. It's going to come into this, whether it's batteries, compressed air energy storage. Hydro has come back into the mix to see how they play. And it has gotten so much more complicated. And then we look at how many resource decisions we used to make. I mean, we used to go years without making many resource decisions, or it was a combustion turbine or something like that. When I look out of the horizon, if we look at our resource plan, we're making acquisition decisions almost every year, multiples in certain years. And so it's just because of the age of the system, the changing technology, this whole process is going to continue to get more complicated than we've ever dreamed of. And then you layer on CPP on top of that, and the issue that each state has to hit a goal, and then we have to layer on top of that, how is MISO going to operate a joint dispatch associated with that? So it is very complex. Mm-hmm. And so directly to your question, how did we handle it? I don't think we've ever had this situation until the last couple of years as this complexity's entered. And so it is new, I think, for all of us to deal with.
What you described are kind of the rationale moving forward that we see that this has become more important. But really what drove this was seabed and biomass. And those were things that – those were the costs that came up in the last rate case that just didn't seem appropriate for our ratepayers. That seemed kind of egregious. So I just think that's an important thing to remember, how we got to this point, you know, because had it not been for some of that, maybe we wouldn't be looking at these things.
And certainly, I think it was a valid point, a valid discussion, and that's why getting those taken care of is a part of the negotiated agreement. Setting those aside and focusing our efforts on the RTF, Clean Power Plan, moving forward, changing technologies, I think that's exactly where we are.
Do you have in mind what you're looking for? And what, first of all, what's your role in the RTF discussions? And do you have in mind some ideas for how you hope this ends up?
My role, I think, as heading up resource planning will obviously to participate and see if we can find a way to get, again, input. How do we negotiate? And so I think I'll be a contributor to that. I'm not, you know, so I think from that standpoint, it'll be there. What am I looking for? I think, one, we have to look at, okay, what are the questions we have in front of us? So to answer, what are we doing with the existing system? Are there going to be changes? Are we going to look at it differently? But what does that existing system look like? And then what are the alternatives that we're going to look at to fill in around that existing system? And what are the state's desires? What are the state's needs based upon Clean Power Plan, energy policy, in addition to reliability and available transmission? And so I think we'll look at all of those to see what alternatives do we need to look at. So in my mind, that's the fact-gathering stage and the beginning of the discussion, the negotiation. Then I think there'll be analysis that has to be done to see how does it play out for all of the states. What does it mean for cost? What does it mean for attaining all of the requirements for each state? And the negotiation process. So I just don't see, frankly, how we can move forward unless we start having these hard discussions with our various states. Mm-hmm. Because there are going to be hard discussions because people haven't looked at it this way. It is a changing environment, and we're going to have to look at it that way. And so I feel it's a necessary step for all of us to move forward.
Are you familiar with some of these types of discussions going on in other states, and what can we learn from those?
I certainly have some experience, like in Texas and New Mexico, where we have renewable standards in New Mexico, and that they pay some of the incremental costs associated with those standards versus Texas. And even then, that's a little bit difficult because there's always changing circumstances of what are the gas prices and who does it affect? And so it's even a little bit cumbersome when we have a somewhat more of a clean line. We certainly had those same issues when Public Service of Colorado used to own Cheyenne Light, Fuel, and Power. And we used to go to Cheyenne, and they had a different opinion than what everybody in Denver. And so we worked through some of those differences, even on the gas side, having shared gas supply contracts with them. Now you layer in the complexity of the Clean Power Plan and look at Texas. Now it's divided ERCOT, non-ERCOT, and how we deal with ERCOT companies in figuring out how to deal with the Clean Power Plan potentially in Texas is going to raise some of these same issues. And so I don't have all the answers, certainly, right now, but we see these issues coming up more and more all over. And that's why I'm thinking this is the appropriate time to do it, because, as Commissioner Kalk said, we'll have the Clean Power Plan in front of us. It's going to be going along a path, if it stays on course, that we have those same discussions. If it doesn't, it'll also create a path. So we certainly can look to, like, how PacifiCorp handled their various jurisdictions. They're having to look at that more today even. We deal with PacifiCorp in Colorado because they have a coal plant that we're part owners with them. They don't have any customers in Colorado, so they're dealing with those same issues. How do they deal with Colorado rules when they don't even have customers in Colorado? So, again, what I'm saying is a lot of people are facing these same decisions. That's why I think it's right to go ahead and go forward.
And are you familiar with what's going on in New York? They seem to be coming up with a whole new approach to their planning and their rate making and their the way that they interact with the companies they regulate. I forget what they call that process, but they have sort of a fancy name for it. Are you familiar with what's going on there?
In a very high level, I'm familiar as far as, you know, do they even create a DSO, a distribution company that's different than the transmission, that's different than generation, and that they deal with them separately, and completely different business model that we have. We're continuing to be vertically integrated. We don't operate in any retail choice states today. So we have a very different business model. We have a very different vision of how do we accomplish some of those same goals that they're trying to do, but in a different business model. Mm-hmm. And so we talk about it a lot. We talk about different business models from a strategic standpoint. Our company believes we can bring the best benefits to our customers by staying vertically integrated. And that's what we believe is our path forward, at least in the near term, as opposed to some of the more of the New York models that are less integrated and more specific regulation to the type of service you're offering.
Thanks, Kurt.
Mr. Simser, did you have anything additional?
No, I have nothing further, Your Honor.
Mr. Hsu?
Nothing additional, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
I do have one, excuse me, which was just prompted by this last conversation with Commissioner Fedorchuk. The concept of the state mandating certain power, those ratepayers paying the incremental cost of that power, you said that's happening in New Mexico right now.
Correct. They've accepted the costs associated with their incremental cost of renewables.
Incremental cost. And that sounds like a really simple answer to this whole thing. I mean, really simple. So have you had that conversation in, say, Minnesota? Have you that sounds like a lot less trouble and effort and a lot more likelihood of success than the complications we've been talking about.
It sounds simple, it becomes more complicated based upon the assumptions that people use. You debate adding a carbon value in one state and not in another. You take into account what's the value of a fixed price contract versus the risk exposure of a floating price of gas. And so although it seems very simplistic on the surface, it becomes complex as soon as the rubber hits the road and you actually start talking about who's paying for what. Mike, I'm sure, could attest. There's debates that we even had about, do you use LMP pricing? Do you use the average avoided or the average energy cost? What happens if things change, you know?
But you're going to be talking about all of that in this plan, too.
Certainly.
This is a framework.
And that's part of the outcome of the RTF could still have some of those components in here. What I'm just indicating from experience, it's not as easy as it looks on the surface when you're just looking at some of those restack or repricing. I mean, certainly we went down that road for a year talking about those different alternatives, and it's still a possibility.
But have you brought it up in Minnesota as a possible solution to your dilemma of asserting that you don't have, you won't get full.
We've talked about with Minnesota staff about the incremental cost and could we bring that back to bear in Minnesota for those policies. Some of those costs, I believe, on community solar gardens, they've accepted that that would be theirs. So we've had some of the general discussions on that. Again, the general feedback in the meeting that I was with said, okay, when we're talking about biomass, as the testimony reflects, it was tied to the continued operation of the nuclear facilities, and therefore that's a package that makes sense to stay together. But yes, we've had a general discussion about that. Again, it gets real complicated real quick, though.
I know, but so does everything.
Yeah, thank yeah.
That's all.
Commissioner Kolk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple quick ones, Kurt. The I guess I always learn something from you, right? So the winter time you may switch to oil. I'd never heard of that before. So how does that work? You got a big batch of crude sitting out back, and you fire it through, or what is that?
A typical design that we see, like our Cannon Falls facility, the Mankato facility, what we have with at Inver Hills, is that we would have oil tank storage on site so that we don't have to buy firm gas year-round to make a combustion turbine more economical, and that then we would have the ability to run it during the summer on in fairly cold
you
days.
You can make the crude work just like gas?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. You have a dual-fuel unit, and you put in the oil into it when you have to run.
Okay, now, see, and what do you permit for air quality then? That's not us, but I'm just curious because this whole thing is driven potentially by, not this thing, but the CO2 emissions. Does that completely throw off your CO2 emissions?
No. They have permit. We would ask for a permit for dual fuel if that becomes it. We're looking at locations that we don't necessarily have to do that, but it's a very common design that most independent power producers to get financing if they don't put in dual fuel.
Okay. And then this is just a general knowledge question. Not only before we had the pipeline rupture, but a couple of years ago, the gas supply in Fargo was tight some of the winters. So has that cleared itself up yet?
No. That's why we would be designing a backup system for the combustion turbine.
Commissioner Fedorchak's point, though, if the system is still tight in Fargo just for heating, why aren't we looking at a new pipeline?
Until we can all pay for a new pipeline that expands. Again, I'm trying to make this project economical. If I didn't have the issue of making it economical, we would look at that. But right now, they did an expansion to Fargo 3 years ago, I believe, was the expansion that allowed us to have more capacity for the winter.
I remember that.
And so what I think they did is they reinforced the crossing into the town border station.
Okay.
And so I think until the LDC needs more capacity, local distribution company needs more capacity there, the electric's going to have to look at standing on its own.
Okay.
We've certainly looked at joint projects. We've struggled to make an economic.
And this is a separate discussion. I know Commissioner Christman was just talking about some stuff we got to file with the health department, but I've never highlighted to me, I never picked up on it, I guess, that these natural gas sometimes have a backup of running on crude and how that may affect our state plan on other things. So I'm just glad you brought that out.
The combustion turbine under the Clean Power Plan is in a covered unit because its operation is at a minimal number of hours.
No matter what runs through that, as long as it's a
CO2. As long as it meets the air permit that it's given for the location, we would be very specific to that site. It should comply with the Clean Power Plan.
Okay, thank you, Kurt.
Questions? Commissioner Fedorchak?
Just two quick things. The CTs, are they exempt from the CO2 regulations? I was thinking there was some sort of caveat that said, oh, by the way, and any new CT, doesn't matter if it's running on fuel oil and has got a fairly substantial carbon footprint at some point, they're exempt. Is that true, the new ones?
How the Clean Power Plan is, that's for existing units. The Clean Power Plan only covers existing units. To the extent that you're building a new unit, it would be under the new standard review, which is 111B, not 111D.
Mm-hmm.
And 111B has specific rules for combustion turbines and emission requirements. We would be designing this as a primary gas with a fuel oil backup so that it would meet the 111B standards and also to be able to get permitted for a limited number of hours of operation under oil. So when you look at it, its carbon footprint is not that significant. It's actually very small because it doesn't have many run hours. In fact, because of how you would offer it into MISO, if you lost your gas supply and had to be an oil backup, you would be at the very highest part of the stack as far as cost. Mm. And therefore, MISO would look to dispatch you last and therefore wouldn't affect things. Again, you're looking at it for a combustion turbine to run year-round. Now, when we look at expanding it to a combined cycle, then we would be looking at bringing in a firm fuel supply year-round, because a combined cycle can handle the economics of a firm fuel supply year-round. A combustion turbine typically in the economics can't, because you don't run it enough. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at sites for expansion, we're looking at those, which leads us south to look at alternatives and also alternatives coming off of Viking. But those become more difficult.
Does leakage come to play for the CTs or only for the combined cycle?
The primary leakage in the Clean Power Plan is around the operations of the existing combined cycle fleet. So you have to make sure that you're not transferring energy off of an old combined cycle onto a new combined cycle, because, again, that's just a way to get around the rules they state. And so that's where the leakage issue comes. Mm-hmm. But again, CTs at the limited number of operations most likely would not fall within the scope of 111D.
Okay. And then to your conversation with Alana, this isn't really a question, but just a follow-up in support of what she was saying. The framework is like a principle, it seems to me, as we've talked about these are principles that everyone's going to agree to. And then no matter what you do, it is going to be extremely complicated to implement those principles. I don't care what you're looking at. So whether it's everybody agrees in principle that, you know, if they decide they want more clean energy, they're going to pay for it, or whether it's, you know, that we agree in principle that North Dakota is going to go off on our own, you know, all of those have extremely complicated scenarios. So I think that we just need to be honest about that and not dismiss some of them that might make, you know, most sense from a fairness standpoint.
I agree, and I think that's why you have to keep the whole slate of what Mike and Dave put together as far as what are the options. Because, again, like you said, it really depends on how people view differing policies and different objectives and how much specific detail we need in this. Mm-hmm. So it could be something that it's incremental cost and everybody agrees to that. It could be something, it could be separation of companies, because you need it more specific. You need a hard and fast rule that FERC would oversee. And so I think we want to keep them all up in the air, but this is the time to have that discussion.
Commissioner Christman?
I just want to loop back to your characterization that this shouldn't really be impacted by the Clean Power Plan. I kind of agree with that generally. But doesn't that sort of presume that all the states are just going to sign on to the Clean Power Plan? And isn't the point of the state implementation plans to allow states some creativity to do something that's probably not contemplated in the Clean Power Plan in order to meet their ultimate goal? So by the time the state's done with the state implementation plan, it may impact this.
Maybe I miscommunicated. I think it will impact. I think the Clean Power Plan will be a key in the RTF discussions. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think states are going to have different opinions, different paths, different timings. And so I think there is a large impact of the Clean Power Plan.
Then I misunderstood.
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. That's why I think they have to move together at a very ratable pace, because I think we need to have these discussions as we're developing the Clean Power Plans to make sure we have a path of implementation.
That's why I think probably adding another year both to this RTF deadline as well as the rate lock are important to get through that state implementation plan. timing or filing. No other questions.
Mr. Simpson, anything else?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. I think now would be a good time to break for lunch. Or did you have anything?
Well, if the commission is still interested in recalling Mr. Clark, maybe we can squeeze him in before lunch, and then we can clear the slate of our company witnesses.
Well, my thought would be that he could be up here for a while.
Okay. Then take some lunch.
He needs some fuel.